morning, everybody. Matt Vibala with you here on 720 WGN. We hope it's a good time. Thank you, Patty and the gang. Always good to hear Patty when I'm driving in. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're here with you until 5 a.m. Roger Badish is otherwise occupied right now in the newsroom talking with the gang from Patty's show. Jess Raines is behind the glass here when you dial or text 312-981-7200. We've got a fun show tonight. We've got some exciting stuff we're going to do. At 1:30 a.m., there was a cool story earlier this week out of the BBC about radio signals detected from
I saw that story.
From deep space. Yeah.
By the way, you said it was from the BBC?
Well, the story I have.
Right. Well, you have to say it the right way.
From the Pate Vasquez. Well, that's not English at all.
No, not at all. What was that?
I don't know. Patty threw me off. She waved. She blew a kiss. I got a little tingly.
Well, it's not from the BBC.
I didn't mean
they're
that
called
in a bad
the
way.
Beeb.
That an excited way.
They're called the Beeb.
We're not close enough to call it the Beeb.
Really?
No.
Okay.
Now we could say it real formal, like from the BBC.
Yes.
Was that better?
I think that's very good.
So, and I don't even. That's just where we have the story from. I don't know that they have anything to do with it at all. But some dude wrote a story. Just was able to find him, so he's on the radio with us at 1:30. We'll talk about signals from deep space.
Cool.
Our good friend Kim Belwack, who's a local journalist who writes about all sorts of things, including death penalty issues and local politics. She's going to come in studio and hang out with us, and we'll talk about a lot of local stuff tonight. Belware. I call her Kim Belwack because that's her Twitter handle. Kim Belware is in studio with us. Sorry, Kim, if you're driving it. And then,
yes.
At 4 a.m., you know, you remember, Raj, if you've been listening closely over the years, we have talked a number of times since the Havana Embassy, air quote, attacks. Remember the supposed audio or sonic attacks making all these people sick. And we've had a guest on who is an American who teaches in New Zealand. He's been with us many times. Every time a new story about this comes out, we call him back and we say, hey, they're saying blah, blah, blah. And he says, no, 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 it's mass hysteria.
Yep.
Vanity Fair article this week.
Saw it.
Mass hysteria.
Yep.
Now, Jess found, I said, Jess, get our guy. She didn't know who I meant. She got the author of the article, which is sweet.
That's awesome.
I meant our guy. So at 4 a.m., just email our guy, though, and say, hey, did you see the Vanity Fair article? We're talking to the Vanity Fair guy and see if he can come on at 4:30. And maybe he'll see it on a Saturday morning in New Zealand and say, yeah, I can jump out for a few minutes. If not, we'll talk to him soon, too, because he's finally getting his due.
Yeah.
Because he said from the beginning, are you yawning? Why
what?
Are
who,
you
me?
Yawning? It's 1:09 a.m. I just started. Really? I'm boring you that quickly.
I was in the middle of something.
That's what he says.
That made you yawn?
I apologize.
What were you in the middle of that made you suddenly yawn?
I was about ready to say yes, and I...
And you were so bored with that answer.
No, I felt the yawn coming on. I felt the yawn coming on, and I had to stop talking. And I tried to do it quietly, and
little,
I apologize.
A little hurt, Raj.
I'm sorry.
Hurt, I gotta say.
It's all right. I did it before, too.
Generally, here we don't yawn until the 3 a.m.
By the way, you might we've got a secret for you. Just doesn't even know.
So who's the we then? Just you?
Wait, what?
Roger apparently has a secret that even you don't know about, Jess.
That's not fair.
Well, hopefully he's going to reveal it now. That he's,
no, I'm not going to.
What are you doing? No. Is this that Dave Ennett's running the Skokie parade?
No, no, no.
Because boy, you built that one up for a couple of months online. I'll tell you what, your big announcement for weeks, and then I find out it's going to be who's the grand MC is at a parade. I'm like, oh my, really, Raj?
Oh, come on, that was a big announcement.
Yes, it's exciting, but the way you built it up.
The power of social media.
Okay. What's the secret?
I can't, if I tell you, it's not a secret.
Then why did you bring it up?
Because I want you to be on edge. Again.
Again? You're going to try to scare me again? Is there a clown in here? And I got to look underneath. Make sure there's nobody hiding.
Check behind the curtain.
There's no curtains in here, right?
Oh, the blinds. I'm sorry.
They're all up.
Okay.
The blinds are up. You know, I didn't realize until tonight how tall this building is. I was walking up to the building. I was thinking, I wonder if we're towards the top of the building because we're on floor 18. There's 28 floors.
Yeah.
There's more floors.
We're close. Let's put it this way. We're closer to the top than the bottom.
I don't know if you come in through the main doors.
Yes, I did see. The fishies are gone.
The fish are gone. And they had a sign that says they're at the Shedd Aquarium.
That's right. I took pictures. I haven't had a chance to post them yet.
We had two huge fish tanks in the lobby of this new building. Huge, beautiful fish tanks.
And the fish were gorgeous.
When we walk in, they actually had curtains around them at night, which I thought was really
nice.
Well,
on the back, on the street side and on the sides, but they were still open in the lobby, but then the lights were off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The lobby side, as you walk past, you could see the fish swimming around, but the curtains were on the sides and the street side to keep the sunlight coming. You know, the setting sun gets too bright.
It's interesting, though, because they had a real crew outside tonight. Did they just take the tanks out tonight?
I think they were.
Is something else going
on? When
they have like a
are they working on the street?
They've got cones blocked off. They got a bobcat out there and a bunch of construction guys. Like, they're really doing some major work in here.
Well, that's a heavy unit.
Were outside.
That's a heavy unit. Those tanks are humongous, and they're in a couple of parts. And I noticed, because one was already gone when I came in at about 8:45.
Okay.
And there was actually a hole in the floor, I guess, where water would be pumped through, or wastewater would be, or air was being pumped up into the tank from, or something. But those units, if they had a bobcat to help take those units out, that's, I would think that would be the case.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder what we're getting, because they said, you know, we're making room for some exciting new...
Well, I'm thinking, and I kind of talked to the security people there, I'm thinking that little pastry shop on the other side of the building might come around to the front side, where I think there's going to be a lot more foot traffic.
Oh, interesting. You know, I just finally realized earlier this week there's a pastry shop on the other side. Whenever we go on the elevators, there's glass, like it's blocked off, and I always wondered, what is that over there? And earlier this week, I had a chance to walk over there. I said,
it's like a car. Wait, you carry on. Hold on a second.
You freak me out when you do that. Will you stop doing that every week? Roger is always just, what are we going to do about Roger? He says things like, uh-oh, and then turns off his mic like something's going
bad. All right, we have it from our field reporter. Adam says that
fish tanks? Coffee shop?
Yeah, the coffee shop is not moving. They are moving the security desk over there.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
The frozen security desk.
Why is it frozen?
Because, like, when it's really cold outside, well, you know how much windows we have down there.
It's
They're huge. Yeah, it's all window.
Right.
And there's no heat down there.
On the first floor?
Well, if you can feel it, you're lucky.
Okay.
There is no heat. They have to keep a heater behind, and a really crappy one, too, behind the security desk. And they wear their coats and their hats. And when it gets really cold out, that's what happens. And then during the summer,
gets really hot.
It's too hot, and the air conditioning doesn't work. It's a very high ceiling. It's like a two-floor high ceiling.
It is,
So, you know, what would normally work fine in a normal room doesn't work down there at all. So so it looks like they're moving the security desk over, and then who knows what they'll put over in that other corner.
Probably put some sort of a retail establishment.
Yeah, maybe. Because, you know, we got new management. Came in a couple months ago.
In this building?
Yeah.
I didn't know that at all.
New management a couple months ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
You got to stay with it, bud.
Is that what I need to do?
Is that your surprise?
Is that the big secret?
What? No, that's not the big
secret.
What's
the big secret?
We're not telling.
When will
Who's
we find
we?
Out?
We are not telling.
Who is we?
We are not telling.
We are not telling who we is?
Is
do you even know who we is?
Yes, we do. You'll know whenever it happens.
412 text.
Is it a good surprise?
Guys, I have breaking news.
Yeah, it may be.
Roger.
What?
Breaking news.
Uh-oh. Wait a minute. Let me get the teletype going here, the news bulletin.
This text just came pouring in. Matt, this is your pizza guy. I wanted to let you know I sublet my pizza shop to some kid named Tommy. Tommy said he has an inn with two fat guys at WGN and can sell 60 pizzas to them. LOL.
What?
I think I'm guessing Tommy was referring to you and I.
Oh, really?
So what's happening is our pizza guy is saying we've put them out of business because we're not ordering pizzas anymore.
Oh, really?
and we're ruining
his No, life. We're not.
That's what he's saying. Now, oddly, our pizza guy has a 412 area code.
Pittsburgh.
So Pittsburgh. Doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Well, there might be a Papanino's in Pittsburgh.
But I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what, Papanino's guy. You would have...
Sorry.
Jeez, God.
Raj.
Hey, 412.
This night has really started out, hasn't it?
Do I still get free pizza? Because last
Jess,
last
no,
week...
you're shunning them. You're shunning them because
we're not getting
ordered
pizza
for like 2 years straight.
Mm-hmm.
We stopped, and they don't care. They don't call. They don't write. They don't say, hey, just a wellness check. Normally, order pizza. Everything okay up there? That's what they should have done.
He said that you and Roger were not allowed to order pizza, but I was.
That was 412 talking, not their real pizza
guy. Yeah.
He could. He now, said I got, he's I the get, real pizza guy.
Adam is our new engineer because you remember Aubrey retired after 28 years, 32 years here.
32 years.
So Adam now has this shift.
Right.
And I used to see Adam all the time. I haven't seen him in a long time. And Adam looks at me now and goes, when's pizza coming?
So well, because he knows the stories. Yeah, he didn't know we stopped.
This reputation. I wonder right. if he would have never taken the shift had he known that free pizza had ended.
He probably wouldn't have.
Probably not.
No.
Yeah. And I don't blame him.
Because, you know, he's got to drive from like 1,000 miles away to get in here every day, and he's hungry by the time he gets in here. And he's not like me where he preps his meals ahead of time. It's a little beef and noodles.
Well, maybe
you
need to teach him how to do that.
I'm not. He's a grown man. He can learn on his own.
Well, then he can buy his own pizza, too. Jeez. Roger's got his own laugh track in there now. Adam's just sitting there laughing at Roger. Laughing at Roger's snorts. They got a real giggle snort hotel
going on. At least
he
can still breathe right now. We're good.
At the moment. Adam, if you have a CPAP in there, keep it handy. What did Patty give you during the show tonight?
Nothing.
Maybe that's the surprise.
Maybe she missed it. Pittsburgh texts free pizza for Jess. Well, 412, when you show
Thank
up,
you, 412.
When you show up with free pizza for Jess, then we'll believe you.
He
from Pittsburgh.
Until now, you're all text.
Where?
That's all you are.
Where? Oh, maybe we could have Aubrey investigate this for us.
Aubrey's busy. He doesn't have time for us anymore.
What's Aubrey doing that he's so busy?
I have no idea. He's at home.
He's at home keeping Roger's secrets.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I think Roger's crying.
Yeah. If any of you want to jump in and help us out here, it would be greatly appreciated tonight. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Talking about the mysteries of deep space after the news that's coming up at 1:30, if Roger can contain himself. Do you guys remember Courtney Thorne Smith?
Yeah, the actress.
Actress from Melrose Place?
Yeah.
She's on an infomercial on one of my TVs right now.
On your TV?
Who is that? Who's the other one? Older actress, incredibly beautiful, even though she's like got to be in her 60s now.
Are they talking
English?
About?
Used to be, like, oh, was she in the Thornbirds?
Yeah. I know who you're talking about. I've seen it too. And they've got a room full of women.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and like they're talking about some product.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she makes jewelry. She's in jewelry commercials,
yes.
The older actress.
And she also does commercials.
She has her own line of jewelry.
And she also has her own line of religious stuff. She does, she has a commercial about.
Really?
Yeah, it's on one of those digital channels. That, and I'm not talking cable or satellite. It's digital antenna channels.
Okay, one of the
when you scan through and they load up all those
Stephanie
digital channels.
Stephanie Seymour, right?
Yes. And,
no, Jane Seymour.
And she, I think that's the one where the shows are all, you know, upbeat, positive shows, and it's based on religious beliefs and stuff. And I think she's the one who comes on. Because she's got the accent.
Yes.
Right?
Well, she's English.
And she comes on and talks about her line of jewelry based on, you know, prayers and all this kind of stuff. So she's busy.
Yes, she is. She's an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. Well, then, by the way, day 17 of No Diet Coke. I can't believe I made it this far, but I'm very happy about it. And I'm much better off with the water. All of you out there that are addicted to caffeine and Diet Coke and whatever it is, I am here to tell you, as somebody who is as big of a junkie as any of you, If you can get yourself off of it, you will feel better. It's true. I'm normally way more tired when we're doing the shift and I have to slug Diet Coke. When I've been on this all water thing, it's actually helped. It actually makes me less tired, which doesn't make sense to me because normally the caffeine I feel is what kept me up. But if you wean your body off of it, then I think it helps. So there's that. 312-981-7200. We've got news coming up in a few minutes, and then we're talking about deep space on 720 WGN. Roger, a texter asked if you're thinking of Roma Downey.
Yes, my bad. They both have British accents.
Roma Downey was from, there was a TV show about an angel, right?
Yeah, Touched by an Angel.
Touched by an Angel.
Yeah.
No, this is Jane Seymour.
Yeah, this is a different one.
You know who I'm talking about now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. But they both kind of look, they're both older and they kind of look alike and they have British accents.
But Roma Downey had really dark hair, right? Jane Seymour had lighter hair. I'm just saying. I just did a little live read for Chicago's Best Sunday Nights at 10 WGN TV.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing favorite nostalgic foods.
Oh.
What is, if you're going to be nostalgic about a food, so I guess if you're nostalgic, my feeling is that means something I grew up with that was comforting, right?
Okay, yeah, sure.
I don't know if that has to be that, but that's what it makes me think of.
But is it food that was...
I guess it could be something you just miss because you don't have it anymore because they closed or you moved away.
Well, right, but what I'm saying is it food that you went out to eat or that your parents made for you?
Well, they didn't define it in the 10-second commercial, but let's go ahead and let's do one of each. Give me something from home and something that you'd go out to get that you miss.
All right, well, I think what I missed... And you can get this anywhere, but for some reason we had family celebrations there. We had birthdays, weddings, bar mitzvahs, whatever. And it was a unique place, multi-storied like a home, and artwork filled every wall. Wasn't necessarily cheap artwork, but I'm not kidding. Small pictures, large pictures, all framed. It was a restaurant, and it was in Evanston for decades. And the owner of it wrote a cups-like column in the Evanston Review every week about all the famous people who came in to the restaurant and talking about the benefits going on in town and
what
stuff.
What a great promotion for him.
And... The spaghetti was so great, they actually sold it in grocery stores.
Wow.
Frozen in grocery stores. And it's called Fanny's. And Fanny's closed decades ago. And it was a great loss to people who love the place. And then somebody bought the recipe for the spaghetti, the Italian meals, and opened up a Fanny's across the lake in Michigan. It was right on the lake. I don't know if they're still open. It was very hard to get to, I remember, because one day we were just driving around on a weekend up there and saw the sign, Fanny's. But we didn't go during the day. So another cool thing about it was if it was your birthday or an anniversary, they would come out with a white sponge cake. A slice of white sponge cake. It was always the same cake. It was like a signature thing with a candle in it. And they would come out and they would sing happy birthday or whatever. And the place was so crowded. Tables were right up against each other. And you would have table of two next to a table of 10. It was absolutely fantastic spaghetti and fantastic Italian food. That was Fanny's. I have pictures of us standing out in front of it as
That's
a kid.
Cool. And what about one from home?
I think the one from home, and I have the recipe, I haven't made it in ages, is my mother's fried chicken every Friday night. Fried chicken and mashed
Friday
potatoes.
Night was fried chicken.
Yep. And she made it special.
Sounds good.
She would coat the chicken in an egg dip and then put it in a bag of crunched up cornflakes.
Okay.
And then shake the bag and put it on a greased sheet and bake it.
Nice.
And it was delicious. Juicy inside.
Yeah.
Just crisp enough outside. And that kind of that, there's just a tad bit of sugar in the cornflakes.
Sure.
That made it sweet. And we'd have mashed potatoes. And Friday nights at our place was just fantastic.
We're going to do more of this later in the show. We got a guest coming up here at 1:30, and our friend Kim Bellware is in at 2. But after 3, if you're going to be up with us, if you're hanging out, think about that. We'd love to hear from you later in the show. What's a nostalgic place you used to go to you don't get to go to anymore because they closed, because you moved away, whatever. And what's something from home? So Roger had Fanny's in Evanston. And he's got fried chicken on Friday nights at home. We'll do more of this after we check the news. It's 1:31 in the morning. Let's get some headlines from Roger Badish. Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We're here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's also the text line if you want to drop us a text. As you know, I do love once in a while to talk about things out in deep space. And I often wonder, and we talk to about anything like this, I bug to try to promise me that we'll figure out before I die if there is anyone else out there, if there is intelligent life elsewhere in the universe. Nobody ever promises me that, but I'm hopeful. So when I saw this article this week, I got excited again. Mysterious radio signals from deep space detected. Astronomers have revealed details of mysterious signals emanating from a distant galaxy picked up by a telescope in Canada. Precise nature and origin of the blasts of radio waves is unknown. Among the 13 fast radio bursts, known as FRBs, was a very unusual repeating signal coming from the same source about 1.5 billion light years away. Such an event has only been reported once before by a different telescope. Joining us on the phone right now is Sriharsh Tendulkar of McGill University in Canada. I apologize, Sriharsh. I don't know if I'm saying your name right. Am I getting close?
You're pretty close. Yeah, don't worry.
Well, thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. We appreciate it.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
A fast radio burst. What does that mean? Explain to me, somebody who doesn't understand this stuff, what we're talking about.
Right. So if your eyes were sensitive to radio light, so radio is a form of light, except that your eyes can't see it. You would just see a flash in the sky. So imagine you're standing in a field and somewhere randomly in the sky, there is a flash of light which just lasts only a thousandth of a second, a millisecond, but it is coming from the other side of the halfway across the universe, right? And some of them can be really, really bright. Some of these fast radio bursts could be as strong as cell phone signals.
Okay.
So this is what we are thinking, what is a fast radio burst? But to detect it, you need sophisticated telescopes. You need a lot of signal processing.
Sure. Sure. Okay, so if it came from 1.5 billion light years away, do these travel at the speed of light or do they travel faster? Like, how long did it take this fast radio burst to get to Earth?
So radio waves are light, so they do travel at the speed of light, essentially. There is some effect because of the electrons in the intergalactic medium, so they travel slightly slower, but effectively they travel at the speed of light. So the 1.5 billion light years is the upper limit. We don't know the exact distance to these fast radio bursts yet, but it is the upper limit. So we think that they took somewhere around a few billion years to come to us.
A few billion years. Is there any chance?
Yes, I know.
Is there any chance that this isn't a naturally occurring phenomenon because of something with a black hole or a star or something like that? Is there any chance that this is a radio wave that is created by something?
There is always a chance, but it's extremely, extremely unlikely. For fast radio bursts, they look very physical. And we have seen similar flashes from our own galaxy. And we know that these are coming from pulsars, which are neutron stars. And these are physical objects. You don't need intelligence to produce these. And the powers which are required to produce fast radio bursts are huge. To control that kind of power would be unimaginable.
Well, and then what's the concern or why are we so shocked when there's a repeating burst, because that just doesn't seem to be something that would naturally happen?
Right. So most fast radio bursts which we see in the sky are single flashes. So something will flash in one location in the sky, and we have looked at the same location in the sky for hours on the end afterwards with powerful telescopes, and we have not seen anything. And then there are some where, as you said, it repeats from the same location in the sky. And these could be a different kind of source which emit fast radio bursts. You know, you could have this. You could have a neutron star which bursts quite often, or they could be, you know, maybe the repeating fast radio bursts are younger neutron stars which repeat very often, and then the single ones are the old neutron stars which don't repeat very often. Maybe they emit one burst every 10 years or one burst every 50 years. So that's these are all possibilities. We don't know what they are, but when you have a repeating fast radio burst, it allows you to study them better because you can use other telescopes to follow them up, study them in a much greater detail.
So the point of studying these is more just to figure out our universe, why certain things happen, where things are coming from. They try to get people excited with the headlines like something detected from deep space, which leads somebody to be like, oh, somebody sent something from deep space. But this is most likely, 99% likely, that it's just a naturally occurring phenomenon and you guys are just trying to figure out where it's coming from and why these things happen, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, we are trying to just figure out what these are and why they're, what is happening out there, how they're related to other objects in the universe that we know of, right? And they're fascinating on their own. These things are a trillion times brighter than what we have ever seen before. And we don't know what kind of a mechanism can produce these very brief flashes of radio light. That's one aspect. The other aspect is, you know, we can conceive that fast radio bursts can be used as probes of the universe. So when the radio wave travels through through the universe, it interacts with every electron and magnetic field that there is along the line of sight. And so we can probe the distribution of matter, the distribution of magnetic fields, and how these structures grew in the universe, which would be fascinating. And thirdly, we are not thinking of fast radio bursts as intelligence, but there are astronomers who are searching for extraterrestrial life. But nobody is actually thinking of fast radio bursts as extraterrestrial life, but people are searching for it. There are serious efforts out there.
And what do you think about that, Shriarsh? You know, you guys have such incredible technology that you're detecting this radio burst from 1.5 billion light years away. Are you impressed with how well you guys are able to detect things going on across the universe? Or would you say we are still in a real infant technological stage for being able to ever detect whether there is life elsewhere in our galaxy or in the universe?
Well, technology is always improving, right? So what we think as really challenging today, tomorrow will be very easy. So from tomorrow's perspective, today's technology is infant technology.
Sure.
Well, right. So 50 years down the line, we'll have, you know, amazingly fast computers and we can do so much quantum computing. But today, all of that sounds really challenging.
So Shriarsh, I just turned 47 years old, so I'm going to go ahead and hope that I have 50 years left. So look into your crystal ball and tell me, 50 years from now, hopefully I'm coherent enough to know what's going on, will scientists be saying, okay, we now know definitively that there is or is not intelligent life elsewhere?
I think by 50 years, we'll have signs of life somewhere, but it doesn't have to be intelligent life. So most likely is that we'll detect life in the form of, you know, or that is biological activities on some planet in other locations. Because if you can look back at the history of Earth, right, most of the time it was bacteria and plants and everything. The intelligent part of it, the ability to send or receive radio signals, has only been in the last 50 years, right?
But so that's from us, though, right, Shriharsh? I mean, that's our planet, but there's other planets, possibly habitable planets, that would be billions of years older than us, where maybe people...
It's possible,
right?
Yes, I agree. But so if you look at the fraction of time spent in, you know, just biological growth versus technological growth, it's much more likely that you'll have life in biological stages than in technological stages. But I agree with you that it is just our planet. Maybe other planets grew differently. So it's hard to say, but I hope that we do detect it.
It would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
It would be. Yeah, it would be amazing. It would be a very hard thing to prove, but it would be amazing.
Yeah. Do you think that if we ever do find out that... So, all right, so you think we'll find it, but it's going to be biological. We'll know that there's plants or things like that. If we mm-hmm. ever do find intelligent life, do you think it will be found because we found it or because it contacted us? What would your guess be on that?
That is an interesting question. I have not thought of that, but my guess would be because we were searching for it. It's more likely that, you know, there are civilizations which are emitting and not really concerned about emitting signals, particularly towards us.
Yeah, yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, that would be my guess, but. I'm not an expert in these things.
Sure. So is your area of study these fast radio bursts? What is your general, what are you looking into all the time? What are you working on?
Right. So for the past 3 years, I've been almost exclusively studying fast radio bursts. But before that, even through the past 3 years, my specialization is neutron stars and magnetars. So I study these extremely dense, compact cores of dead stars. And some of them are extremely strongly magnetized. These are called magnetars. And I study those. And magnetars are thought to produce fast radio bursts. That's how I got into this business. So we are studying fast radio bursts. Hopefully they might have something to do with magnetars.
Is there an energy in fast radio bursts? Like, you know, the way we harness solar energy, is there any possibility for usefulness for these fast radio bursts or radio bursts that are hitting?
Oh, Earth? No, absolutely not. Our radio telescopes are extremely sensitive. I mean, so are the radios in your cell phone and other things. The radio light is extremely weak in some sense. Mm-hmm. So if you collected the energy of all the radio telescopes that had been operating since World War II, the total energy is less than that of a snowflake falling from the sky, snowflake. Yeah, so the amount of energy is extremely tiny here. So although we are saying, oh, this is these flashes are extremely bright, that's because our telescopes are very sensitive.
Yeah, no kidding.
And they have to be powerful. The thing producing these flashes have to be extremely powerful, but that's because they're really, really far away.
It's fascinating.
By the time it gets to Earth,
yeah,
the energy is completely gone.
Fascinating. Sriharsh Tendolkar from McGill University in Canada, thank you so much for enlightening us tonight. We appreciate you coming on the phone.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
We'll talk again. Thank you so much. All right, so there you have it. Radio bursts coming from 1.5 billion light years away. They're trying to figure out where they're coming from and why, but don't get excited like I did. Doesn't mean anybody's coming to visit. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. 312-981-7200. A little while ago with Roger, we were talking about, because we did that little live read for Chicago's Best this Sunday at 10. They're doing your favorite nostalgia food. And Roger told us that for him, it was a restaurant called Fanny's in Evanston that doesn't exist anymore. 847 texted, my family loved Fanny's. And he said, as far as home cooking, Friday nights were fried chicken nights in the Badish household when he was growing up. And his mom made fried chicken with cornflakes and a big mess of mashed potatoes, and it was delicious, and he misses that. 708 texted, Country Club Motel on North Avenue. I don't know if there was a restaurant in there. It sounds suspicious when you first read it, but I'm going to assume there was a great restaurant in there that they used to love. I was talking earlier also about that I've been off Diet Coke for 17 days and that I'm my goal was, I got sick over Christmas and I was really sick for a couple of days and I kind of sort of felt like it was a detoxing. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to quit Diet Coke for a while at least and try to, since I had to be sick and lose weight, I might as well spring into healthiness for a while. So I'm trying to go 30 days without Diet Coke. And I don't know that I'll go back to Diet Coke afterwards. 630 writes, hi, Matt and crew. Just wondering if you have a cup of coffee in the morning or are you completely off caffeine? Thank you, Nancy. Hello, Nancy. So I've had caffeine like three times since Christmas. I have had, maybe I even haven't had it three times. We went to dinner last Friday at a Denny's, and I had a Dr. Pepper. And I don't think I've had a Dr. Pepper otherwise. I know I had a root beer, like a little can of root beer once at the house, an 8-ounce root beer, and that had no caffeine. And I had a Sprite, which has no caffeine. So, and I don't drink coffee. My parents drank so much coffee when I was growing up. I love the smell of coffee. I never developed a taste for coffee, and I think I just didn't want to get into it. Because every restaurant I'd go to, we could never leave because my parents would have to sit and have another cigarette and a cup of coffee. And I just have a bad association. I never smoked a cigarette in my life. I never even tried a cigarette. And I've just never drank coffee, I think, because my parents just turned me off to it. Jess, growing up,
yes,
was there a restaurant? What is a food or something you had growing up that you think back fondly on?
Sorry. Okay. I couldn't hear you for a second.
Oh, I'm right here. Hello.
I'm sorry. What was the question again?
So speaking of nostalgia, so Roger gave us Fanny's and his mom's fried chicken. Give me something you remember from your past that was a restaurant or someplace that either isn't there anymore or you don't live near anymore that you used to love going to.
Well, everything, I grew up with my grandma, so everything that she cooked was amazing.
It was a one dish in particular that you would get so excited about?
All of them.
There's really just whatever grandma was making was amazing.
Grandma is the best cook ever.
Okay.
And we didn't really go out to eat much when I was younger, but there was one restaurant a few miles from my house. And then we would all go, and then I was young, I was like 4 or 5.
Sure.
And we would go there maybe once a week or so, and they had more of traditional type dinners like mashed potatoes, Salisbury steak, stuff like that. I think I probably got something normal like mac and cheese, but...
Because you were a kid.
I can't remember.
No, that makes
that
sense.
That far back.
That makes sense. That sounds good. We will, Kim Bellware is coming in a few minutes to join us to talk about local politics and other stories that she's been looking into and writing about. Just handed me a story that I found earlier tonight from CNN, and the title is interesting to me. Roger, I wonder what you think about this. The title is, What is It, and Does Kamala Harris Have It? Kamala Harris, a Democrat from California, I think is going to announce, the rumors are that on MLK Day coming up, she's going to announce that she's going to run for president. I really like her. Now, maybe I don't know her politics well enough, so I can't say, you know, that I'm going to like her politics. But I really like her when I've heard her speak during hearings and stuff like that.
And I think that's what they're referring to as the it.
Well, that is the it, right? Because a lot of times for a lot of us, I think... My guess would be there's 20 to 30% of Americans who really have a strong knowledge and feeling about the politics of their party on both sides. So say that's 60% of the electorate. There's another 40% that the it part really, really matters.
Right.
I think it's what got George W. Bush elected. You wanted to have a beer with George W. Bush. You'd like to hang out with George W. Bush.
Yeah.
Al Gore, nobody wanted to hang out with Al Gore. Al Gore was going to put you to sleep and just, you know, talk down to you. And I like Al Gore. And it cracks me up when these politicians go through a whole 2-year process of trying to get elected. And they're stuffy as all get out. Al Gore, Bob Dole. And then, like, after they don't get elected, suddenly they're as loose as a goose and seem so much more fun. You know, Al Gore, like, went out speaking after he didn't win, and you're like, hey, I like this guy. Where the hell was this, Al? It would have changed everything, I really believe.
Look at Bill Clinton when he got up and played the saxophone on TV.
Bill Clinton needed to rein in the charisma a little bit, as we all know. Bill, put
a little too much.
Zip the fly up and put the charisma away, okay? Let's just relax with the charisma there, big boy. We understand. We get it. Relax. How about you get a little wonkier? He had Al Gore to handle all the wonky stuff while he's off flirting, right? Although he did have a lot of personality.
Yeah, he did.
Very likable.
Isn't that crazy? He played saxophone on Arsenio Clinton. And so that's the famous moment.
But with the sunglasses.
But I think the other one is him on MTV answering the boxers or briefs question.
Oh, yeah.
That was weird as hell.
Yeah.
I believe the answer was boxers.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good, because nobody wants Envision Bill and his tidy whiteys. I mean, seriously. That's right. That's right, Roger. I'm wearing the boxers. Still wearing the boxers. And I'll tell you what, I can still get with the ladies.
Jeez.
What are you laughing at? Roger, you and I take it out on the town, brother. I'm telling you. We'll get it done.
You go ahead and get started without me. I'll catch up.
There's no catching up to Bill Clinton once he gets started. You are left in the dust.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, you were away from the desk for a few minutes.
Sorry.
People were texting about nostalgia. I believe that's what this text is about. 708 just wrote, Country Club Motel on North Avenue.
Country Club Motel.
I'm going to hope that there's a restaurant there and they're not remembering some time in their life when they were really carefree and sort of like a Bill Clinton.
And ordered room service?
Well, maybe getting that room for 4 hours. That's what they charge. No need to waste it.
They didn't write the song Afternoon Tonight for
Afternoon Delight.
For yeah.
Afternoon Tonight, is that the sequel you're writing?
It's a sequel.
Afternoon Tonight.
Well, tonight comes after the afternoon. You do know that, don't you?
Well, I guess technically you're correct. Oh, Saved by the Tone. Our friend Kim Bellware is in studio with us after we do this. What is it? It's an even hour. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Hey, smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. You heard the tones, 2 a.m. Here's the news with Roger Batters. Welcome back, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Joined in studio right now by our good friend Kim Bellware. Let me see. I never get these mics right. Talk for a second. Let me make sure that I actually have you on a mic.
Yeah, I'm here.
Look at that. It's the right mic. 312-981-7200. Kim is with us. She's a freelance journalist now, do we say? Because you're working for everybody, right?
Yeah.
The freedom and pain in the butt of being the freelancer, right?
It's true.
It's true. Great when it's great, and then it sucks when it sucks.
Yeah.
But Kim has been a great friend of the show and comes in from time to time and talks about it. Actually, we first started talking to you because you've done great coverage of death penalty
cases. I know,
cases.
You're always so kind to bring that up.
Well, because I'll always see a story. There's somebody I follow on Twitter who I wonder if you'd be interested in following. And maybe I follow her because I love Twitter is by far my favorite form of social media.
Yeah.
Just because I follow all these journalists and I learn so many things and then I find new people and I guess there's not just a bunch of my suburban friends bragging about their kids. it's very different. And I feel like I learn a lot from it. And there's somebody who I have no idea how I started following. Her name is Carrie Blankinger.
Oh,
from the Houston Chronicle.
Yes, from the Houston Chronicle. Yes. Carrie and I are Twitter friends. We've talked on the phone before.
So I bet it's because you were retweeting something.
She is awesome. If you don't follow her, I think it's like Carrie Blankinge. It's not her full name. It's not weird like mine is, but she is a great follow. Yeah, she is a criminal justice reporter for the Houston Chronicle. She's done some really great investigative work. And, you know, she's someone who has had experience being in the criminal justice system. She was incarcerated for, I think, about 2 years on drug charges.
Right.
And, you know, she can speak to, you know, the food, the loneliness, you know, like there was the story that came out. A lot of people wrote about it and I almost wrote about it, but then it moved too quickly and I had other things and I couldn't get to it, which is kind of the pain of being a freelancer. But there was a story, NBC, The Guardian, USA Today, and Washington Post all wrote about they somehow I like all of these publications and I don't know who the writers were behind them, but it was a huge failure on all of their parts.
The shutdown steak story.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do, but go ahead and elucidate a little
bit
for us.
So for anybody who didn't see the shutdown steak story, now that we are in now officially the longest ever government shutdown. Not a great goal, but we did it. We did it.
And I keep wanting to tell the joke like, my shutdown, the longest ever, biggest shutdown ever. Nobody, Obama could never do a shutdown
like this.
And
someone should be like, that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
But the shutdown, it was around the holidays that there was a federal prison that was it? I can't remember now. Was it Colorado?
I don't remember.
Or some, maybe out east. I actually can't remember the location.
This is also the bad part of Twitter because I see a lot of headlines that I don't then click all the way through.
I read the stories and I couldn't. Now right. I can't even place.
But I think you might be right about Colorado.
It was a federal prison, though.
Yeah.
And the inmates were given steak and beans and macaroni and cheese and, you know, all these things. And these stories written by these, you know, reputable outlets and frankly outlets that should know better. It was a complete, I mean, I see this a lot. This pitch came from, I think, the head of the correctional officers union. And I've seen these kind of things where they're not coming from the press office. They're not coming from the spokesman.
It's coming from somebody clearly with an angle.
Yeah, they're coming from someone clearly with an angle, but they are not like, I am the spokesman for the correctional, right, you know, officers union. It's someone who kind of represents themselves as like, I'm somebody in the know. I am a tipster. And, you know, when you do get someone who is not coming from the official channels, that can kind of make you think like, oh, I'm getting something, you know, novel here.
Yeah.
And it must have been apparently the same pitch to all five outlets because they even use the same quotes. I mean, part of the thing that I also thought was that I found really questionable editorially is that the CEO or the union head read excerpts of mail that inmates had sent to their loved ones because they do get to read everything. But, you know, it's not like this guy consented to have his words shared
reprinted,
widely,
yeah,
you know. And it was, you know, some guy kind of joking like, oh, I've been eating like a boss, like I'm gonna get fat if I eat like this. And I'm just gonna guess that if you read the whole letter, he probably would have been sort of facetious, because anybody who knows anything about food in prison is that it's terrible and you don't get very much of it.
Is that even in the you know, the club feds that we like to talk about, where like a Blago might be, or somebody who's not a hardened criminal but a white collar criminal, even there is, you're not going to be like, ooh, I'm excited to eat today.
Well, Martha Stewart, who was at a federal prison, Camp Cupcake, as they, you know, they called that one, mm-hmm, I think she actually gained a lot of weight because it is, you know, it's not very nutritious.
Sure.
It's pretty much, they in a lot of cases, they have got it down to exactly what they need to provide to meet, you know, hit these benchmarks for calories and, you know, vitamins and nutrients. But, you know, you can also chew on a piece of wood and like you get some of the same things. And, you know, the guy Richard in Oklahoma, who's on death row that, you know, we talk about, and yes, who's how I got into this. When he had been up for execution several times, and he's still alive, and, you know, his executions had all been called off, you know, you get the last meal, but it's not this formality that people think, you know, it's like a meal that you get to choose, and it's not necessarily the last meal that you eat before your scheduled execution.
Really?
But he had been on a hunger strike, and he was so malnourished, his friends and his legal counselors and, you know, Sister Helen Prejean, his kind of spiritual advisor, had all said, we're going to fight. You need to fight and you need to be healthy. So when he was given the option, he ordered a bunch of fast food, and his lawyers just said, you need to get as much, you know, as many calories as you can because you're, you know, 30 pounds underweight. And it was, I don't remember if it was, you know, the New York Post or some tabloid, you know, just wrote this very cruel, they were, you know, kind of mocking. It's like, if the lethal injection doesn't kill him, you know, a heart attack will, kind of thing. And, you know, they don't know anything about this.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I've eaten prison food before. It's not great. And, yeah, you know, there are special occasions where, like, you might get cake, you know.
Yeah.
I'm guaranteeing the steak that those guys had was
not something we're getting at Chicago Cut.
Probably, yeah, right? You know, you're not getting that at, you know, Chicago Chop House.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is that I think the thing that was frustrating to a lot of people about that story is, one, it was not in context. They weren't getting the,
yeah, how did
steak
it relate to the shutdown?
They were, the framing, you know, from this officer who had this angle was kind of that, you know, like there's not enough support in the prisons, and like they're just getting away with it, or it's like, you know, some of our hardworking Americans are going without paychecks, meanwhile these prisoners are getting steak. And this is a tradition that had been, you know, the budget and the menu planning had been allocated for far, sure, you know, before the shutdown. So that was one thing.
Was this like a special once a year there's a steak,
yeah,
or something,
you know,
like celebrate the new year?
And not
or
everybody
something like
does.
That?
Not every prison does that even.
I'm
but
sure.
This particular prison, they've had this tradition. And, you know, sometimes you have volunteer, you know, churches or places in the community that will try and do food, you know, for the prisons. But the other thing is that they didn't talk to anybody who was actually incarcerated at that prison. That is just kind of journalism 101, is you let people respond to that, especially if they're going to come off looking kind of unfavorable. So that one was, you know, I saw it, and I think everybody's reaction, especially, you know, again, from the outlets that it came from, they were thinking, what? And then slowly you saw a lot of like the kind of criminal justice reform publications, like The Appeal, The Marshall Project, you know, they put it in their newsletter, and then you start getting more pushback to it. People saying like, whoa, this is really messed up, and here's why. And I think it's fine. I mean, people, if they're really interested in how their money is spent, then if they had a full accounting of how prisoners are fed, even if you think that prisoners shouldn't have anything nice ever, you're probably not going to come, if you know the full accounting of it, most people are not going to come away thinking, wow, they're getting,
Well, and I, you know, it's interesting because I would think that as a prison guard or somebody working in a prison, I would be okay with them getting a nice meal once in a while, because a happier population, I would think, makes the guards' jobs a little easier. Of course,
yeah,
they're
incentives,
being punished. They're being away from their family. We don't want them living some life of luxury. But at the same time, for all the people that work there, you want less violence and less anger and less hostility that they then have to deal with. I imagine workplace injuries are a huge issue at a high-security prison.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that's one of the big challenges in prisons. If you have people who are serving life sentences, they're not going to get out. How do you incentivize someone to, you know, how do you incentivize good behavior? You do it through basics that they're not really getting all the time. Yeah. Like maybe it's recreational time, maybe it's better food. You know.
And for the people who are going to get out someday, you want them to have hope for a better life and to be working towards it, and just breaking their spirit as much as possible while they're in prison, I wouldn't think leads to a great, you know, and now I'm back outside and boy, I'll just be better forever. I think you know, you need to. They got to prison because of some bad choices and some bad life things, and I'm sure most of the time because of addiction issues or a broken family or whatever. There needs to be more, I would imagine, more rehabilitation, and a decent meal once in a while probably isn't the worst thing in the world.
I always wonder what people think, you know, if they are opposed to things like prisoners getting a good meal every now and then.
Right.
I always just wonder, you know, for the majority of people who are in prisons, they're gonna get out. What do you think is going to happen? What do you think happens in a prison? You know, if you don't spend any money doing rehabilitation or harm reduction and things like that, like, what do you realistically think will change that when they go in and then when they come out, if you do nothing but make life, you know, miserable for them? So, I mean, just kind of as a just a very, you know, looking at it practically speaking, you know, you can think that prisons should be no, you know, no picnic, but you should also
for the
ask
most
yourself,
part,
what
I'm
kinda,
sure they're not.
Yeah.
And even, you know, Martha Stewart or Rod Blagojevich, somebody who's in an easy prison, you're still stuck there every day.
Yeah.
For however long.
Prison is boring. And
I'm sure.
Lonely, like being bored all the time and being lonely
and
all the
people
time.
Most people there probably aren't real nice.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of crabby because they're stuck in prison too.
Rod Blagojevich, I mean, everything that we've heard, you know, I think Chicago Magazine and NBC had those big stories about him. I think it was early last year.
Yeah.
He seems to be a pretty popular guy because people think that, you know, like people call him boss, and, you know, he teaches Shakespeare and he had a dishwashing job and he still runs, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that you live out in the suburbs, but yes. I lived in Uptown just east of Ravenswood when he was governor and when, you know, when he was arrested, you know, when he was indicted. And I, you know, sometimes like if I would go running west towards, you know, through Ravenswood towards Lincoln Square, and every once in a while you could see him in his tracksuit. You know, didn't he get arrested in his tracksuit, his mug suit? He's wearing
I think
he's wearing a black tracksuit, I think. Yeah. So he does, I guess he's getting, like, he's pretty jacked in prison now.
Buffed up and ready to go.
Yeah, he doesn't have the black hair anymore because he was coloring it.
Went gray.
But he is, he's...
Are they not allowed to buy that in prison, you think? Probably
well,
not, right?
In the commissary, you know, women can buy certain cosmetics and they're like the cheapest, most bargain basement thing. But I don't know, because there are, depending on the prison, and I would think especially the kind that he's in, which I think he's in the one in Fort Collins.
He is in Colorado.
He is in Colorado. You sometimes have, you know, barbershop, you know, hair salon, mm-hmm. and you can save up money, and some of it is, you know, vocational training and things like that. But apparently he is not able to do it. But also, that man has a head of hair on him.
Big,
so
massive head of hair, yeah.
I imagine you'd need to do touch-ups.
He's still got that.
Yeah, he still has his hair.
Yeah.
But if, you, if you've got hair like that, I imagine if you color it, wouldn't you have to touch it up pretty often?
I would think you'd have to.
I mean, I don't think people judge this kind of thing harshly in federal prison. But,
yeah.
But, I mean, kind of like kidding aside about his hair, that's another thing. Like, whether it's, you know, basic grooming, that's a very basic way of making people kind of feel connected to their humanity, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you want to, you know, shave, you know, kind
of to look good and still maintain your sense of self.
Yeah. Cause it's not, you know, it's not like, cause you're trying to impress anybody. It's because you feel, you
better
know,
when you
together.
Look good, just like we all do when we're sick or down or whatever. And you get up and you take a shower and you fix your hair and you head out and you, that does get you going. Right?
It makes
you feel a little better.
I put on an eyeliner and we're sitting in the dark.
We appreciate the effort. There's no effort needed when you come to 2 a.m, believe me. A couple of interesting things about Blagojevich, as long as we're on this topic. I got to meet him once. Steve Bertrand, who does the reporter here and news anchor and does the Noon Business Lunch, was we were working with Steve at the time, recording videos for him. He was doing a series of videos for Barnes & Noble. They had this Meet the Writers series that we did videos for. And I want to say it was after he was already in trouble, but before he got indicted, he wrote a book, Rod Blagojevich.
Okay.
Is that right? I know he was already in some sort of trouble, but I can't remember, or maybe he was, did he write a book after he was indicted, but before he went on trial?
I mostly remember the books written about him.
Yeah, he wrote one, and I don't remember.
I think you're right, though, yeah.
But he came in to record an interview with us at my studio, and, you know, he gives his interviews how he gives them, then as soon as the cameras are off, every other word's like a curse word. It's hilarious how
we all heard the tapes.
Yes. So he's cursed this and that and this and that. And we get into a discussion, all of us there. And he's talking about how he was basically horse trading and it's politics and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, but isn't that the problem that you can't blah, blah, blah? And he like kind of puts his hand on my shoulder and says, you naive young man. I like that. Like,
I can just see him doing this.
It was hilarious.
But was he charismatic? Like, did he have that kind of force field that a lot of politicians,
you know? It was interesting because I've spent time with Pat Quinn, and I really liked Pat Quinn all the years he came on John Williams' show when I was producing. Great guy. And I mean, he would take notes from listeners who were asking questions.
Oh yeah.
And it was just real. And now, you know, other people I talked to really have a foul sense of him, but I really liked him as lieutenant governor for sure. And I've met, you know, Al Gore before and some people like that.
I think he actually is not someone who, Bill Clinton had the charisma. Al Gore was the one
who
everyone
thought was,
you know.
Yes, we were talking about that earlier in the show. That is very true. If Bill could have reined the charisma back a little bit, he wouldn't have been in so much trouble. But Blago, to me, didn't have a politician's like kind of presence like a Dick Durbin has or anybody like that. He had a Southside alderman kind of, let's have a beer and let's get some work done. Probably more of an Ed Burke is how I'm guessing.
He's comfortable, but he like
comfortable.
Dick
in
Durbin's
his
a statesman.
Yes, he is. And Blago wasn't. Blago's like a FNA, right? Let's get this done. Let's go. You know, that type of real Chicagoese type
guy. And wasn't that kind of the? I don't know that he was necessarily looked down upon for this, but wasn't he kind of seen as this, in a way, rags to riches because he ends up marrying, you know,
Alderman Mills. Daughter.
You know, Patricia Mell, and he marries into this very influential political family.
Right.
You know, kind of was like a Serbian child of Serbian immigrants, makes good kind of thing.
I don't know.
Blagojevich.
I'm not going to say 100% for sure.
That.
But that sounds right. That sounds right. And he never was the statesman. He definitely wasn't. He was more of a guy who got there.
Yeah.
Right. And so I just remember that from him very well, just how he was. And certainly recently, the interesting things are the way he's trying to play President Trump into a pardon.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
think it's been fascinating how him and Patty are figuring out what is the best way. Interview on Fox News for Patty, op-ed in the Wall Street Journal from Blagojevich.
Very conservative outlets.
Attacking the FBI, attacking the Justice Department. I mean, I think it's kind of brilliant.
It is. I mean,
Trump has made it sound like, he got a bad deal. He shouldn't have blah, blah, blah. And I don't know when it's going to happen or if it's going to actually happen. But
he's a reality show governor, so it's perfect for the reality show president.
Absolutely. And then Patty was on, Rod was on Celebrity Apprentice. Patty was on like some Drop Me on an Island show.
Yes,
he was on Celebrity Apprentice.
Rod was on Celebrity Apprentice, and that's how they know each other.
Yeah.
And then after he went to prison, the family needed money because they were going to lose their mansion in Ravenswood.
Okay.
And she did a reality show called like I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Right.
You know, I think someone did an interview with her too, and it was sort of, you know. There is something to me that's very interesting about their, you know, their love story and their commitment and things like that. I mean, she's
been impressive.
She
yes.
sticks by him. I mean,
because she could have just left him in the dust, gone back to, because there was a big falling out with
her father.
And her father.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, she like ate a tarantula on TV. And I mean, it's also, I mean, she's humiliating herself for her family. I mean, I think they have, I don't want to talk too much about their kids because like, you know, they, you know, these are their parents, you know, and they have their own lives. But I mean, I think they really, you know, they had two, his daughters were little when that happened. And I think something that really stuck out to me, as much as like he is kind of this cartoonish figure, it's still, you know, he is still in prison and it still makes me sad.
For his family.
Like he tries to keep, I think that one of the articles talked about how he's trying to stay connected to his daughters and like, they, you know, became teenagers and then like, you know, like I think at least one is college age and that's a time when you kind of, you know, withdraw. And if you're, you know, a teen girl, as I was once, you kind of like withdraw a little bit from your dad anyway. Yeah. And then you're doing this with like the distance and Patty, I think still flies down and sees him every month or so.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, she makes pretty regular. 'Cause I think one of the other things is they were trying to get him moved someplace closer.
Right. Right.
Because it's, I mean,
so difficult for the family.
Yeah. It's not a, you know, there's a lot of flights, you know, it's not the worst flight.
No, but it's, there's an expense in flying versus driving
and
to anywhere, right?
That's another, like, you know, for old criminal justice reporter, me too, that I think is something that anybody who is sentenced to federal prison, it doesn't always make sense why they're sentenced so far away.
Right.
I mean, even in, I'm working on a story right now that's about kind of what, advocates, you know, in favor of changing this practice they call prison gerrymandering, and it kind of has to do with the census, because the U.S. census counts prisoners where they are incarcerated and not where they're from. And about 60% or more of the Illinois state prison population comes from Cook County, and so Cook County is losing, you know, thousands of people that are counted in these small rural, you know, the mostly rural towns.
Right.
And, but that's relevant as far as, you know, a story that I did a couple years ago about this bus ride, the reunification ride, that is something out of the Cabrini Green Legal Aid. They take kids whose mothers are incarcerated. Moms are less likely to get visits in prison than dads. Because a lot of times mom will take kids to see dad, but dad won't, or dad isn't in the picture, and it's expensive. You know, a lot of people are in prison in the first place because they don't have money for a good lawyer, you know, bail or whatever. And
or that's why they committed crimes.
Or
they were poor, destitute.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you have to take two small kids, on a 3.5 hour drive, you need to have a reliable car. You need to have money for gas, for food, maybe staying overnight, you know, depending. And, you know, it's expensive, and it's an expense a lot of families can't, you know, bear. And they're, you know, thinking of if you have a loved one who is from Cook County and they're incarcerated down in Montgomery County, like, how miserable is that?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't under, it seems like overly punitive to sentence people so far from home, because especially if they're going to come out, that's the whole, that's like the most important thing to make them successful when they're released, is having, you know, contact.
It's a tough balance, right? Because nobody wants to have pity on prisoners. You got yourself in there. You've got to, you know, face the consequences. And that's what we want, is the consequences, right? And we don't think enough about what happens when they get released. Have we put them in a position by just punishing them the entire time that they're likely to commit crimes again? That's not good for society either.
Yeah.
We need to balance that out with, you know, there's the deterrent effect that we want because we took you away, but there's also, you know, here's your chance to try to right the ship while you're away, and what can you do so that you have a better chance to succeed when you get out? All right, we got to take a quick break. Much more with Kim Bellware, our good friend. Follow her on Twitter. She's a great follow, at Bellwack, B-E-L-L-W-A-K, at Bellwack on Twitter. News next on 720 WGN. The Rapid Wallet Show, 720 WGN. Having as much fun off the air as I am on with my friend Kim Bellware, who's sitting here with us. Follow her on Twitter at Bellwack, W-A-K at the end, at B-E-L-L-W-A-K. And if you're going, what in the hell does that mean? It's, as Kim has always explained to me, back when you first started with Twitter, your name counted against your 140 characters.
Yeah, so back when it was 140 characters.
Yeah. And now if you change, you'd have to change the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not worth it. Just bellwack it up. Which sounds kind of funky and cool anyways.
I feel like I just assumed that everybody knows that it's my last name and my first initial, but...
Yeah, because I'm like, well, where's the R-E?
That was like a puzzle.
I might need those two characters.
It was like telling you the clue to like the hardest space in the New York Times Sunday crossword. And you're like, that's it.
It did blow me away. And you finally explained that to me. We were talking off the air about presidential candidates, because I was reading, there's a story earlier from CNN to headline, "What is it? And does Kamala Harris have it?" And I think she does, at least in my mind, because I don't know her politics very well, but I know her from what I've seen on TV, and I really like her. And you were saying something about, you know, we were talking about all these different candidates and Joe Biden and things like that, and Elizabeth Warren and these older candidates that will, of course, be there. And we're saying that maybe it seems like it's finally time for a Gen X president. Yeah. And there was a story earlier, somebody tweeted something about all the different generations, you know, the boomers and the millennials, and that this is sort of Gen X's time. Nobody hates us at this moment, it seems.
Yeah.
Like we're in our sweet spot.
Step into
right
the spotlight.
Yeah. Yeah. Gen X, it's our time. You know, millennials are hated. The boomers, people are getting tired of. Now it's us. And maybe there will be a Gen X president. I know we don't know. There's going to be, it's going to be like the Chicago mayoral race on the Democratic side, right? Are there going to be, do you think, close to 10 people legitimately running? I don't think we'll get to the 16 we had on the Republican side a couple of years ago.
Oh, it was 2015. It's,
I guess it's going on 4 years ago now, isn't it?
I mean, it feels both far.
It's crazy. But like, it doesn't
really
seem that
far away.
How many legit Democrats do you think we'll have running? What's your guess?
Like, how many are serious? I think by the time
we had 16 people trying to do debates for Republicans. I mean, they had, it's crazy to think back. They split those debates into like two separate debates. There was like the junior varsity level of the debate.
How humiliating.
And then the main stage, yes, you're not tracking enough. You're here with them. Nobody will watch you.
I think by the time it gets to the conventions, you know, for the primaries, you've usually got it narrowed down to two or three.
But when we're going debates.
When we're going debates, I would not be surprised if there's like a solid 8 or more. I mean, also, you think of all the ways that the 2015-2016 presidential cycle changed things. I remember when Obama ran his 08 campaign and solidified with his 2012 campaign, is people were talking about he was the first real social media president, or the first president to really leverage that for getting out his message, you know, building building support and things like that. And now with how fast the internet moves, it's just completely mutated. And I think we're going to see changes in campaign cycles happen at a much more rapid pace. So whereas before you had these somewhat kind of a little more statesman-like, somewhat more serious and more traditional debate formats, I think you're going to see networks try kind of like what they do at the Oscars now. Like, they're just going to try and see what, you know, what works. I think they're going to play with formats more. I think, you know, they're also going to maybe try and get some pushback and maybe improve fact checking. Like we saw this now with the presidential address.
Real time fact checking the other night.
And kind of like now that fact checking is something that happens, has to happen in real time because of the kind of people who are in positions to.
And well, and because of how fast it moves, right? Because politicians now can tweet things, can do all these things. It used to be there would be a debate and then there could, it could be talked about for days and you could hear, you know, more, you know, just a deepening of what's really behind this. Not whether, oh, they were lying or this was truthful, but just really, well, when they say this, because I think for almost everything that's said, you could say, well, it's true in this sense. But they're really stretching the boundary of what's true or not, right? You know, even with President Trump, and we talk about the stories he tells, and there's so much talk about whether outlets should be saying he's lying versus he said, you know, et cetera.
I think it was NPR or someone, their kind of justification for not saying, calling them lies, but calling them untruths mm-hmm. or whatever it is that the euphemistically say is that they feel that lie implies intent, and because they can't be inside his head,
right.
They don't know, which I think for normal people is maybe okay, but I don't know that I think it's wise or accurate or useful, doing a good service to the public to say, I mean, are we saying this guy's so dumb, he doesn't even know if what he's saying is untrue. I mean, there's like a certain, I can understand that and I can't. Like on the one hand, I think that of course it's not untrue. But on the other hand, if you are someone who has a, what is that phenomenon called? The Dunning-Kruger effect? It's like the lower your competency, the higher your confidence. And, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, this is the president's very confident in his own abilities.
Well, he's very confident in whatever he's saying, right?
Yeah.
And even if you said, sir, that is not true, I think he would say, yes, it is. And here's why. And with almost anything that he says that I think people would say that's an outright lie, he would say no. And I don't know if he'd have a statistic or not, but I think with so many things, when Kellyanne Conway said there's alternate facts we're looking at, and everybody laughed like, no, there are facts.
Yeah.
There's no alternate facts. It's either a fact or it's not a fact. But it's sort of like with climate change. As long as there is one or two scientists out there who question it in some way, he feels validation. Like, no, not everybody believes this. And, you know, hey, we had an ice age once. Why can't the world be changing? You know, there's no exact definitive. It's, you know, 99% of scientists agree that this is what's going on. But we all know with science that there have been times over the years that we absolutely believed one thing until it was proven false, right?
Or until something else changed. I think that's where the news has the responsibility to kind of give this context and, you know, sort of contextualize why these, you know, on the one hand, you know, even in the scientific community, you don't have 100% consensus. I mean, you have that with things that, I mean, like, I'm going to stand behind everybody should get the flu shot and vaccines work. But, you know, there's always going to be Andrew, whatever that guy's name was, who had the discredited paper about, you know, vaccines causing autism. And, you know, you're always going to have, you might not get 100% consensus. I mean, there are flat earthers,
right?
You know,
that's the craziest thing ever, isn't
it? And you know, so I think it's not even enough to say I'm okay denying climate change exists because there are a few holdouts that are scientists. You know, then you have to go to like, well, are these respected in the scientific community? Like, are they researchers? Have they been published by their peers? You know, how much weight is their denial? How like much should we really weigh this denial? And I mean, the other thing too is what I hear from, you know, older people especially, and they say like, I'm not political. I just think the news should give you the facts and then, you know, you make up your own mind. Well, I think that's silly because what you decide, you know, I if I'm writing a story about climate change, I mean, what facts do I include? What facts do I emphasize? What facts do I not include? I mean, if I'm writing a story about climate change, I'm not going to include the fact that, you know, 1% of scientists say it doesn't
right.
exist.
Right.
If it's relevant to the conversation, I can say, you know, the president has denied its existence, citing these people. But I it's not going to be the kind of thing where I have to give equal time,
right.
you know, because we're not I don't think that we should proportionally weigh an other side. I mean, sometimes the other
sure.
side is, you know, is garbage.
Yeah.
So.
And so. And I believe in climate change wholly because I believe in science. So if scientists are saying this is what's going on, I'm going to believe them. But I could see where the other side would say, listen, you mentioned flat earthers. Let's go back to when 99% of the world thought the world was flat. And then was it Galileo? Was it Copernicus? I don't know who first came up with the theory. But say that one person was first like, no, actually, the world is going to be, it turns out, I think this is going to be round. And then everybody else is like, what are you talking about? I imagine that first person, everybody else was like, you know, so I could see where President Trump or anybody would be like, you know, we once thought blah, we once thought this. Scientists learn new things all the time. There's things that we don't know. There's the Donald Rumsfeld unknown, you know, our known unknowns, right? And so there's always room to argue whatever you want.
I think that's whataboutism, though. That is the kind of the classic political dodge is saying, you know, well, what about this? When, you know, it's regressive if we say, well, you know, I understand. I mean, I get what you're saying as Matt, but, you know, here's how we could understand the perspective. I mean, I get that you know, you're always going to have some strange conspiracy theories.
Well, I would say even if it's not an outright lie, it's false in that it's going to argue for your sake. You can always find a way to argue whatever point you want to make, right? So if you know, they say that Donald Trump doesn't really want this border wall, but it's this thing he stands on. So he finds, you know, it was interesting just earlier this week, Sarah Sanders was out touting the 4,000 people that are stopped every year trying to enter this country who are, you know, terrorism threats. And I think it was Chris Wallace was interviewing
on Fox.
Her, and he stopped and said, that's by airplane they get caught. They get caught coming in on airplanes.
Yeah.
He said, well, listen, there's all sorts of ports of entry. The point is, you know, so even though he just refuted that fact, they're going to stick with that part of the story. This sells the wall.
I found it interesting that Fox News also buried that interview.
Well, this baby steps, you know, can we? The fact that he stopped and asked the question, I think, is good. And Shepard Smith does a lot of that too.
Yeah, Shep Smith, you know, and Chris Wallace are kind of the only two, I think, on the network. I would be very curious to talk to, you know, like a Fox News, you know, breaking news staffer. Mm-hmm. Because there, you know, there were a lot of staffers that are not, you know, they work on the website and
sure.
maybe their producers who were really, really upset when Sean Hannity appeared on stage with Trump because
said he wasn't going to, not planned to, even though Trump had already said he was going to, but no, that's not planned. And then that night he shows up on stage.
And you know, because I think they also said that makes it really hard for them to do their job and be considered credible.
That's surprising to me, though, Kim, that they're claiming that because it's...
It does surprise me, too.
He's not a news reporter. I don't look at him like, oh, you're not reporting the news. I know what Sean Hannity is. And I honestly, and I'm sorry if this is not the equivalency, but I look at Rachel Maddow the same way. Rachel, I know her leanings, you know, from what I watch. She's not Sean Hannity, maybe, but she's got her angle. And I take her with a grain of salt as well. And Chris Matthews now the same way. I kind of look at them like, listen, I know how they personally feel. It comes through. So I don't look at them as just news reporters. I look at them as commentators. And
yeah.
They've all got their angles.
They're pundits. But I think there's probably enough in place to where you are not going to see Rachel Maddow appearing on stage with, you know,
right. I don't
Obama
believe she
kind
would
of thing.
Do that. Yes.
Like, I think MSNBC as a network probably would have rules about that. But
well, didn't Hannity end up in trouble? Wasn't he censured for that by Fox? There was something, wasn't it, that we don't...
I think that it was the reporters and you know, the people that are below him that were upset with... I think there was talk of, like, some people, whether they were more powerful than him or less powerful than him at the network, that were upset with that. But he is also, you know, a moneymaker. And I think that, you know, now there's, like, kind of this rift in the Murdoch family because the sons are sort of controlling things now. Mm-hmm. And the sons have kind of differing viewpoints on some of this. And I think he's still in good favor with at least one of the sons who matters. So it's kind of, you know, they're not really going to put a hard check on their guy who's, so driving so much of their ratings.
And not to be too cynical, but I would also wonder, even if they were upset with him, how upset they really were.
Yeah, what does that look like?
It's the most powerful man in the world pulling our guy on stage. That's good for the network.
Yeah.
Even if there's a question. I mean.
Well, and their audience. They know what their audience likes, and their audience loves stuff like
that.
And
he's not a reporter who's out reporting something hard. You're going to say, oh, he's going to go soft on him now.
He has claimed to be when it's convenient.
Well,
yeah.
He can claim whatever he wants.
Yeah, exactly.
Anybody can claim whatever they want, right? It's whataboutism. Yeah, but I'm a reporter, except when I don't need to be or want to be, because he's a commentator, and they all are. So many of them. Even Don Lemon now. I've been surprised on CNN, because to me, Fox News, insanely right. MSNBC, you know, shows their colors to the left. And CNN, even though Donald Trump likes to kill them all the time, I think of more as they're delivering the news or trying to deliver the news. But even, like, Don Lemon really goes after things now.
Is he considered,
He just does a show on CNN, so I think he's more like a Hannity or Rachel Maddow, but I'm surprised that CNN is doing that. I guess they split off with Headline News, but God, whenever I have Headline News on, it's like Forensic Files or something.
Yeah.
There's nobody that just is delivering news all the time.
I think that's a real branding problem for websites, periodicals, and cable is, I was having this conversation with some firefighters today about... You know, they think I'm getting opinions. I want news, and opinions have been successful drivers of conversation and of audience, and especially when it comes to magazines or newspapers, with the way stories are disseminated on social platforms like Facebook and Twitter. You aren't reading the section saying I'm in the opinion section and I'm turning the page and I'm in the news section. You just see the link and you see the masthead and you know what publication it came from. So I think it's something that audiences, it's not always easy, like obvious to them that they're reading something from an opinion section. And I think,
well, and look at the editorial boards, right?
I mean,
readers of the Tribune, I forget what it was in the last year, a couple of things that really upset people. And I would see, like, Heidi Stevens and other reporters that I follow tweeting back, it's a separate entity, it's not us, you know, it's really, there's a church and state here, and so don't cancel your subscription because you're mad at the four people that are in that room.
Yeah, the editorial board.
Yeah.
Those guys. Well, those girls, those women, those men and women.
Yeah, so there is that, you know, that line that we have trouble seeing, right? Because we look at it as the entity that we're watching or reading or hearing, and we paint it all with a brush and not don't distinguish a lot of times between columnists versus reporters even within the paper.
I think if it's not super, I mean, if it's hard sometimes even for other reporters to easily identify that, then it's not going to be, you know, easier for an audience that has lower news literacy, you know, even for people that pay attention. I think that it has to be almost, you know, you have to think of it in terms of almost like user experience. It has to be really, it should be really obvious.
Yeah.
And I'll be interested to see what steps, you know, outlets take, because it is credibility. I mean, you might have columnists that people I think really like reading certain columnists at the New York Times, and people will maybe subscribe for that, but you have to make it, you know, it's unfair to the reporters if that's not clear, because then everybody thinks every time, you know, Barry Weiss does a column for the New York Times that, you know, absolutely is awful, then all of these other reporters are like, wait a second, like, that's, she's a different, you know, she's a different beast, you know, than what we're doing.
Yeah, it is fascinating. All right, what are you working on next? What can we look forward to seeing soon?
Well, I just had a piece come out in Chicago Magazine, another one of those kind of what city workers know type deal, and this time it focuses on CTA workers, on transit workers. So that is out on newsstands and will be going online probably this coming week. Excellent. In the week ahead. And then I have that piece on prison gerrymandering coming out in Belt Magazine later this month. And, you know, kind of a few other things that have a longer tail and maybe some shorter things in the work. But, you know, when it's freelance, you aren't sure. But I'll definitely be following the Chicago mayor race and keeping all up on who's in, who's up, who's down, who's in and out.
Will you be writing about that too or not yet?
I think so, yes.
Excellent. And overall freelancing, how do you feel? It's been about a year?
It's been about a year and a half. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, my fate is in my hands.
Right.
I'll be positive about it.
Yeah. Well, that's very true. That's very true. But, and then some of the world around us decides our fate at the same time, right?
Yeah.
But God, you're getting the work.
I'd like to get one of those Megyn Kelly deals where I get paid, you know, $69 million for totally tanking at my job. Someone can hook me up with one of those.
Yeah, well, those are tough to come by. Those don't come by every day. Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Kim Bellwer, thank you so much for coming in. Follow Kim on Twitter at Bellwack, Bellwak. She's got a lot of great stories about a lot of fascinating topics. I hope you'll come back again soon.
Thanks, Matt. Happy to be here.
Excellent. News next on 720 WGN. Life is short, make it sweet. Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. Jess Rain spinning the tunes here tonight. Who is that, Jess? Who's that from?
It's a country song, but it's Old Dominion.
Old Dominion? Have is that new or is it? Yeah, that sounds familiar.
They're kind of mainstream right now.
Sure. Is that a recent song or is that an older Old Dominion?
No, it's a new song. Okay. Newer song.
I like me some country.
Do you?
Oh, hey, Roger.
I do. I love country. I mean, there were a lot of, growing up, there were a lot of country hits in the top 40 growing up. And so I like that tune, but I like a lot of the older stuff from 50s and 60s. So.
Excellent. So our good friend Kim Bellwer, thanks again so much for being in at Bellwack on Twitter. We should give out all of our, we don't promote our own social media very much here on this show. I am on Facebook. You can join our Facebook fan page at The Matt Bubala Show. Follow me on Twitter at Matt Bubala or on Instagram at Matt Bubala. Roger Badish, you are on Twitter and a good follow there. In fact, you just put our fishy pictures up.
Yes, I did.
At Roger Badish? Or
it's Teacher RB, capital letters RB.
At Teacher RB on Twitter.
And then it's Roger Badish on, where's my Facebook here? It's Roger Badish on Facebook. One of our listeners many, many years ago started a fan page for me.
The Roger Badish fan page?
Yeah, fans of Roger Badish. Yeah. I'm also on Instagram.
Yes, you are.
And I forgot what my handle was there.
We're at that age where we were on social media. We just don't quite remember how we got there.
I only have it on my phone.
I don't look up myself. That makes sense.
Right. Yeah. But I don't sign in each time. So my accounts are always open. So I'm not really paying attention to, you know, what it is. I think it's just Roger Badish on Instagram. Yeah.
I'm going to find out right now. Let's see.
Just plain Roger Badish, all one word, lowercase. Yep.
B-A-D-E-S-C-H. Mm-hmm. Roger Badish. Oh, and I just saw a new picture of our friend Jess on Twitter. She just
put it. I saw that one,
Jess,
too.
Jess, did you want to give out your Twitter? Can people follow you on Twitter or Instagram?
Sure.
Well, you can give it out. JustJess927 on Instagram.
That's right.
Got an adorable little picture of Jess behind the mic here tonight. She just put out. So follow us all, and we'd be happy to have you do so. Earlier in the show, real quick, Roger. I was talking to Kim, taking a picture, saying goodbye. What were you reporting? Where was the explosion?
In France.
In Paris?
In Paris. There was an explosion in a bakery on Rue de Travis. It doesn't give an address, a specific address, but when I looked up the map, that road goes past the Folies Bergère. I'm just not sure exactly where this bakery is in relationship to that.
But at the moment, even though we're reporting this, we're thinking, they're thinking it's not terrorism.
No,
it might just be a gas.
They're thinking it's a gas First indications was that it was a gas explosion. It's a bakery.
Is it a huge explosion? Is like the building leveled or something
no,
like that?
No, no. Building wasn't leveled. Just a lot of blown out windows. Okay. A handful of injuries right now. No fatalities reported. Crews are on the scene. Emergency crews are there. It was a very large explosion. So not only were the windows in this bakery blown out, but windows surrounding it were blown out. I believe it's on a corner. If I remember a photo that I saw on another news page, I've been searching through all of the international and the Paris media and finding out specific deals. Details. It's very, very light right now. Building, I think the bakery was on a corner, a street corner, and so and it was there were apartments above it. So windows blown out above it. Some of the injuries may have been up in there, maybe broken glass, being hit by flying glass, stuff like that. And then just next door, the buildings next door. So
there's no deaths or...
No fatalities that we know of yet. There are several injuries that have been reported, according to a police spokesperson. So that's all we know right now.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to double check because I heard you talking about that during the news, but couldn't truly hear it. And I'm sure if you're in Paris and anywhere near that, you heard that and you immediately thought something more than a gas explosion.
And right? That's why sure we jumped on it right away.
Yeah, well, thank you for clearing that up. Earlier in the show, we were talking about comfort foods, our little commercial for Chicago's Best.
Mm-hmm.
This Sunday night, they're doing Chicago's Best Nostalgic Foods. And so I was asking people, what do you remember? What did you love? You said Fanny's in Evanston, which isn't there anymore, used to go to, and Mom's Fried Chicken on Friday nights.
That's right.
And Jess said, what was the restaurant that you mentioned, Jess?
I don't think I gave a name. I really don't.
Any of Grandma's Cooking, and there was a place you went as a kid when you were 4 or 5. You always got mac and cheese, but it was a really good restaurant. But you don't even remember what it was called because you were a little kid at the time?
Yeah, I don't really remember. I still love mac and cheese.
I just had... So, anyway, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. I'd love to hear from you guys. Give us a call. What is a restaurant you used to go to that you just loved that either because you've moved or because it's just not there anymore, you don't get to anymore? I'd love to hear about it. And something from home. For me, mac and cheese. We went to Panera for dinner tonight.
Yeah.
They have... Anna always orders the mac and cheese there. But right now, they have a mac and cheese with barbecue chicken and fried onion, like deep fried onion type strings. It is so darn good. Now, of course, that's fattening as hell. But if you just get the little
you're on
side,
a diet.
Well, I got the U-Pick 2, so I had that, and then I had turkey chili, which is only like 800 calories all together, so it wasn't too bad.
Okay,
it's so good though, so good.
Mm.
I love mac and cheese too. I love Kraft mac and cheese, and I love some of these, I guess, artisanal mac and cheeses that places are making like crazy now.
And
Potbelly's has good mac and cheese when they have mac and cheese.
I'm having mac and cheese, and this is someone who is trying to go gluten free and has a milk allergy. I found on the shelf a gluten free, milk free mac and cheese.
Nice.
And I've had it here several times. They are delicious, and I put some chicken meatballs in with them.
Oh.
And you can't tell the difference. You can't tell that there's no real milk in it. You can't tell that it's gluten-free. Delicious.
That's awesome. Well, good. Good, because I know that, you know, my brother-in-law, Dave, has celiac disease. And this about 10 years ago when my sister, they first figured this out and started cooking, it was all, ugh. You know, they've come such a long way with how they make those foods and how the recipes that are out there. So that's really good to hear. Yeah. Text from Truck and Phil. Truck and Phil checking in. Thank you, Truck and Phil. He says, hello, Matt Bubala, Jess, and the great Roger Badish. Bring on some Johnny Cash or Willie Nelson, or if you dare, Bob Wells in the Texas Playboys.
Ooh.
If we're talking country.
Yeah.
He says, St. Louis is getting hit hard with snow over here in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Supposed to get hit like Chicago, I guess. South to Bluffton, where I'll be working second shift Saturday in the yard truck doing the yard dog jockey thing. Eddie asked, did I ever go get those keys from the sewer the day after, the day after, the day after? The keys, as far as I know, are still safely ensconced at the bottom of the sewer. I do once in a while as I walk by, take a look down and see what the water level's like. I'm hoping this spring or summer when we get a dry spell that that sewer will dry up and I'll take another crack at it. But so far, I had to replace the key, so I've kind of let it slide. But I will take a look again.
Didn't you leave the stick with the magnet?
I left the stick with the magnet behind the huge trash compactor that's in the alley.
Yeah.
And as of a couple of weeks ago, I had seen it there. I still check once in a while.
Oh, okay.
Now I think it's back there, but maybe broken.
Oh.
So I don't know who's... Probably the rats are trying to make condos out of it. So so I don't know if... I might have to make a new one when it comes time to look again. 312-981-7200. Looking for you to check in on your favorite nostalgic foods. What's a restaurant you don't get to go to anymore that you miss? What's some home cooking that you used to love that you don't get anymore?
And it's got to be a restaurant, not a fast food place.
Well, you
know, a sit-down place.
If there was an incredible fast food place.
Well,
place
but now you're going to get Gina gone. Jude's and all these other
there.
Ones.
That's still there. But I mean, you know,
a place that's not
there anymore,
right.
that you can't get to.
Okay.
Ryan's in Chicago. Hey, Ryan, how are you this morning?
Hey, what's happening? That's I was going to say there's a Ponderosa that was out in Hoffman Estates at Golf and Roselle. It's now called La Magdalena, and it's a great Mexican restaurant. They have stuff in there for like 10, 11 bucks you can get out of there. I went for enchiladas one time.
Yeah.
This is without beer. This is if you don't order beer or anything.
Sure.
And it's just a great place to go. And
yeah.
I was impressed. And it's got great red carpet and wood tables and new furniture and chandeliers. And it's just unbelievably decorated place.
I've passed that Magdalena a lot of times. I've never been in. But do you miss the Ponderosa? Is that what you're saying? Or are you just saying?
Yeah. Well, me and my dad used to go there.
And Roger, are there still some Ponderosas?
I love Ponderosa.
I feel like I've been in other states and I still see them once in a great while. Are they still out there?
I think they're. I'll look it up now. But boy, you say that, and that's. I either met her at Ponderosa or Bonanza. Remember Bonanza Steakhouse?
Sure.
Yeah. So
I remember going to Sizzler too. There was one out on Ogden, Ponderosa. At Ogden, as where you get past Naperville going out by 59. And of all things, it had the white sign outside. I was coming back in the middle of the night. I was coming back from Aurora. And it had the white sign with the evergreen trees, like on the side of a mountain. And it said Ponderosa on it. And I go, wow. And it was like 10 minutes from Naperville on Ogden going west. And this is like 10 years ago already.
Yeah, there is a Ponderosa Steakhouse, Plymouth, Indiana. There are still some. There are still some that, wow, they're all over the world, actually.
Now I can't remember, guys.
This is cool.
The Sizzler I know was a steakhouse. Sizzler
right.
was steak.
Right.
Was Ponderosa prime rib, or was it a steakhouse, too, or was it just
it was also a
regular,
slice.
Like, ribeye and stuff like that, and you get a baked potato, and then you go up the salad bar, and you get your salad, and you go out. And then they started this thing in the salad bar, like, all this ice cream and desserts and other, like, the salad bar became, like, the main thing over there for about another 10 years, maybe, and then they got rid of that. And I went to Ponderosa once that was at North Riverside, another one in LaGrange, we went to one that was at 79th and Harlem one time by Dupes. I mean, there was we loved Ponderosa. It was great.
That sounds good. The good old days. Thanks so much for checking in, Ryan. We appreciate it. You have a great weekend.
Rock and roll, man. Happy New Year.
Sir. Happy New Year to you
as
well.
Apparently Ponderosa and Bonanza now are owned by the same company. And that's where Bridget and I first met.
But you don't remember which one?
I can't remember. It was in Bloomington Normal.
What would Bridget say if she knew that you didn't remember whether it was
Ponderosa? Well, I already wrote it in the book. Well, she barely remembers it anyway. Remember I told you about this? I asked for her recollection of when she first saw me.
Uh-huh.
And I says, what kind of jewelry? She says, I don't know. I thought you were kind of nice. And I said, what else? She said, no, that's about it.
It's enough for you.
I thought I was going to be able to write a couple of paragraphs from her impression, and apparently not.
Too funny. 708 says, yes, there are Ponderosa restaurants. Head to Indiana. Well, Roger said,
Indiana. Yeah.
312 says, Little Red Hen Chicken, Lake Forest. Used to frequent many times back in the early to mid-70s, best fried chicken anywhere.
Vaguely remember that name.
Zach says, Costco has a 27-pound bucket full of mac and cheese you can buy now.
There you go.
Come on.
Oh, that's right,
pounds.
Costco.
There's no way there's a 27-pound bucket of mac and
cheese. Yes, they're advertising it. It's been on the news.
27 pounds?
Yes. Look it up. Costco mac and cheese. It's been on the news for the last 2 days.
I don't know what
It's a huge bucket.
708 is my hero for telling me this.
You're going to buy a 27-pound bucket of mac and cheese?
I might. I could have a lot of leftovers.
Think about 27
27-pound bucket of mac and cheese with a 20-year shelf life.
When you get a Home Depot bucket, like that big orange bucket, that's a 5-gallon bucket.
$90 bucks for it.
What would you do with
I'm looking at it right now, CNBC.
That is the dumbest thing I ever
Can you post a picture on Instagram?
It's one of, you know what? You know those buckets that the drummers use on the side of the road? Those big white buckets?
You can't put 27 That's pounds what it of is. Anything. Those, 20... are those are 5-gallon buckets. How can you get 27 pounds of mac and cheese?
180 servings.
Lead mac and cheese?
180 servings.
Ah!
I'm not kidding.
Ah! Kevin, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, I can't complain. It raises the blood pressure, you know?
I hear you, baby.
All right, so Shakey's Pizza.
Shakey's Pizza.
Yes.
Some of those are still around, right?
They used to put peanuts on the table.
Oh, I didn't.
And then you just ate peanuts until you got your pizza.
Man,
didn't they? It was a buffet, wasn't it? Did they a lunchtime buffet? Yes. I remember that.
Yeah,
they did, but they used to. I mean. At the pizza place, they had peanuts on the table.
Yeah. Thank you so much for checking in, Kevin. I really appreciate it. Shakey's Pizza, I remember, I believe, if I remember correctly, Roger, that's where we used to go for that breakfast buffet when we would ditch school at Mount Carmel.
Oh.
Off Burnham Avenue in, what would that be, just north of where River Oaks was? Calumet City, maybe? Yeah, I used to go to a Shakey's.
Yeah, we,
growing up, see, here's some of what I miss. I still get Aurelio's whenever I can because that's what I grew up on in Munster, Indiana.
Right.
And friends of mine, so I was in class with two girls whose families owned, Julie Heward's family owned Shakey's restaurants, and Ann Brom's family owned Aurelio's pizza restaurants.
Ooh.
It's amazing. And I miss that.
All right, so I just posted on my Facebook page with a link to... or, you know, your name pops up as a link.
Okay.
So it's on Matt Bubala. It'll probably pop up on your Facebook thing.
Sounds good.
We're talking about this on Matt Bubala Show. Costco is selling a $90 tub of mac and cheese that weighs 27 pounds, lasts 20 years.
All right. So now somebody's correcting my poor math. 815 says a 5-gallon bucket holds 5 gallons of water. That would be 7 pounds a gallon. So that would be 35 pounds in a 5-gallon bucket.
And this is 27 pounds.
All right. Fine. I'm still not buying it.
How'd you do in math in school?
Well, I'm here, aren't I? I should tell you.
It's okay. I'm with you there. I support you wholeheartedly, Matt.
Wait here for the counting, people.
One,
I can carry the one.
Two.
I can carry the one. I used to make front. I used to tease a good friend of Colleen's, Lenny Sansonetti, became a CPA, and she would talk about work being hard. I'm like, oh please, you carry the one all day, big deal. I just love the phrase "carry the one." Do they still teach carry the one? I imagine they do, right?
I don't know.
Come on, they don't call it carry the one anymore.
I don't remember. Do you know how long it's been since I've taken a math
Not as long as it's been for me, Jess. You're still young. Don't forget that. Still young. All right. All right. So let's talk about this. And please, still, call, text. What do you miss? So I miss Aurelio's Pizza because I don't get that often enough anymore. And in fact, whenever I go back and visit my mom, we go out for Aurelio's Pizza because I still love that pizza.
Mm.
And there's just not one out by me. I don't think. Or does one open up in Elgin or somewhere? I have to look into that, actually. There might be one somewhere near me now. I know there's one. They're sparse in the city, but there's one up by Wrigley Field now. God, is there one?
What, Aurelio's?
Yes. There's not a ton of them within Chicago, at least this downtown area.
I think there's one in Skokie. Hold on a second.
I think one might have opened up out by me somewhere, like in Elgin or something. I'll have to double check that.
South Loop. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, Family Pizza.
It's the best pizza.
So it is very good, actually. Really good. Locations. Here we go. We have...
Is this going to be the school closing center? Are we reading all of them?
Well, it depends. They're all over the country.
Oh, have they branched
out? Addison, Bourbonnais, Cedar Lake.
I've been to the one in Bourbonnais.
Oh, really?
Good. Yes, I have.
Okay. Chicago Heights, South Loop, 1212 South Michigan, Wrigleyville. There's that one.
I've seen that one. That's just north of the field. Yeah.
Crete, Crown Point.
Oh, somebody just texted. There's Aurelio's in Geneva. Oh, that's not
Downers
far from
Grove.
Me. That's not far from me.
Fishers, Frankfurt, Fort Myers, Florida. If you're going down there, Geneva. There you go. You want the address?
Coming up after the news, Roger will continue with the locations of Aurelio's Pizza throughout the country.
Hey, Matt.
Yes, Jess.
I have a question.
Oh, okay.
So I know we're on this whole diet thing now.
Yes. We're not ordering pizza. We can't tonight. We can't.
You don't know what I was going to say yet.
I have a feeling you're trying to talk me into pizza.
No, okay. not tonight.
Ooh,
but
Las Vegas.
Oh, do they have one in Vegas?
Yeah.
I'll be there in a month.
One in Morris.
Ooh.
Not the same as Vegas.
I know. All right.
But anyway.
Yes,
Jess.
If it was a special, if it was a special occasion, are we allowed to get pizza or are we not doing pizza?
What kind of occasion are we talking about?
I don't know.
Well, it's a case-by-case basis. I want to stick to no pizza. We can do it for special occasions.
How special, though?
After a couple of months. We need to take a couple of months off. So we're in January. Let's say, like,
April?
First day of spring. Something like that. If you thought, you know what? We haven't had pizza in 4 months. Let's order pizza tonight. Then I'm in. So we're still on
What did you have in mind?
We're still on the
Jess?
Do not fly list.
Yeah.
What was that, Raj?
What did you have in mind?
It was just more of a question.
Oh, in general.
She's just hoping at some point pizza's coming back.
So Wednesday, March
20th.
Wednesday, March 20th.
Is that the first day of spring?
First day of spring. 4:58 p.m.
I think, Jess, that you would never even eat the pizza. So that's what cracks me up.
I actually had pizza tonight.
You wouldn't order. See, look at that.
But it was like $5 pizza a block from my house.
Is it good pizza?
It's okay. Yeah. It worked.
Yeah. That's the problem with pizza. It doesn't have to be that good to just, you know, be pizza stuff.
My dog liked it.
You know what some of my favorite pizza is?
What?
Aurelio's.
Yes. But we get frozen home run in pizza that we'll just throw a salad together and then
those are good.
They're, you know, when they're on sale, you can maybe get 2 for $10 or $12.
Mm-hmm.
Feeds the whole family. You throw in a salad. Boom. And you're good to go. And it's really good pizza. Really good crust on the home run in pizza.
Well, didn't I tell you a long time ago when I was eating the little frozen pizzas I would buy at the store, like your home run pizza? But they were like single serving pizzas.
Yeah.
What's the...
they have home run in single serving now.
Right. And this was, I forgot, it's one of the Blackhawks, former Blackhawks.
Has a pizza place?
Has
a pizza
no, brand? No, he has the pizza, the single serve frozen pizza in the grocery store.
A former Blackhawk does?
Yeah.
Who?
You're throwing me off. While we figure that out, let's move on to Randy in Ottawa. Hey, Randy, how are you this morning?
Hey, guys. I thought I'd give you a weather update. Coming your way.
Okay.
And starting to stick to the road pretty good over here by Ottawa, heading westbound. So salt trucks are out. Just be careful.
All right. That sounds good. Thank you, Randy. You be careful, too, buddy.
Hey, you know what? Try for personal pan pizzas and then try for a breakfast pizza. Those are quite good.
Breakfast pizza. What do you put on your breakfast pizza, Randy?
Well, I usually get them from my local Casey's, and they got the sausage, they got the ham, they got the scrambled eggs, they got the cheese, and they are delicious.
Interesting.
So we want something different.
From Casey's General Store. Thank you so much, Randy. Drive safe, buddy.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Jess asked if Casey's is an Indiana thing. I know of Casey's more from, I feel like, my trips in Iowa and maybe Wisconsin. Where are Casey's General Stores at, Roger?
I don't know, but I bet he will give us a location
list. He will. In fact, you'll get 34 locations coming up right after the news.
General Store. I mean, Casey's is all over the place.
Oh, my gosh. We got a new pizza hookup. You're not going to believe it.
Uh-oh.
224, Matt. If you tell me what kind you like, I'll bring you some. Scott from Lyle, manager at Aurelio's Naperville.
What?
Oh, my God. Is this real?
Naperville? That's a long ways
away. That's a long way. Scott, we appreciate that. We feel bad, though. That's a long
way. Hey, Naperville is in my block of town, not too far from West Chicago.
So maybe you could go pick up pizza on your way in.
Scott, I need to meet you. If you want, you can call us in right now.
Scott, what's our date for when we jump back on pizza? March 20 what, Raj?
When's what did I say it was? 20th, I think, or something like that. 20th, I think.
You're just 3 short months away.
Yeah.
Actually, two and a half short months away.
What in the heck? I'm still pizza. Looking for this.
Jess, and have you ever had Aurelio's pizza?
I don't think so.
It's very good.
It is the best sauce. It tastes a little like there's a little beer in the sauce.
What?
That's what I always feel.
I'm down.
Like there's a little bit of a beer taste in the sauce.
Uh-huh.
It is so good. So good.
I would be good with that.
Our Papa Nino's friend from Pittsburgh is saying, I sent a text
that Pittsburgh.
No one will serve me pizza. That's not true. Papa Nino's 412. Yeah. We've got Aurelio's now.
Look at this. We got a hookup.
So maybe we go do a remote from Aurelio's.
That would be awesome.
I don't think they're open from 1 to 5.
They would stay open for
would
us.
They? Would they? They'll get a
you better
exemption.
Believe it. They'll sell more pizza in the 4 hours we're on with them
don't be
than they have all week long.
Oh, too funny. Too funny.
What is... All right, somebody needs to call in because I'm looking
Roger.
Like crazy.
Don't stop for... Hey,
Pizza that I used to buy, it's the brand, one of the former Blackhawks players.
All right, somebody let us know, former Blackhawk that has a pizza brand, if you know, 312. In fact, Jess, we have our prize list, right? We have a prize list. I'll tell you what, if you can tell us who former Blackhawk has a pizza, and then Raj says, yeah, that's it, then I will get you a Lou Malnati's pizza, actually. Because we have that on our
prize list.
So there you go. 312-981-7200. First, we got to check some news headlines, Mr. Badish. Here's what I know.
What do you know?
There's a pizza play. There, we know your pizza. Marty has the right answer. Marty, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Hey, man. How you doing? Yeah. Hey, Roger. You're looking at Denny Savard Pizza.
Yep. Savvy's Pizza.
And the funny thing about it was he didn't make a full-size pizza. They were always little pizzas. They were pretty good.
Yeah, the little singles. Yeah, I used to get the pepperoni all the time. They're fantastic.
So wait, are they still out there? But, do they still make them?
Oh, yeah.
I can't find them anywhere. I used to find them at the Jewel. I can't find them anywhere anymore. So if you got a place, let me know.
Actually, it's Caputo's, Chicagoland Jewel Osco, Strack and Van, Super Low.
Yeah, I haven't...
Yeah.
Locally, I haven't found them down by me, so I don't know. I'll have to look some more.
Okay.
But yeah, if they make a big one, all the better. But it's always been that small little one.
Yeah.
All right, Marty. Well, you are not going to get a Dennis Savard pizza tonight, but here's what you are going to get. You hold on, and Jess is going to talk to you. She's going to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. And, of course, what number would you call, Roger, if you were going to call for a Lou Malnati's?
Lou to go. 1-800-LOU-TO-GO.
Call 1-800-LOU-TO-GO. Yo, Grandma, lay me down a beat. Chicky, chicky, chicky. 1-800. Anyway, I could do the whole commercial, I think. Thank you, Marty. Hold on, and Jess will talk to you and get you your Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Cookie writes, I miss Ron Santo pizza. I don't remember Ron's pizza, but I remember having dinner at his restaurants in, I think it was Schaumburg and Park Ridge. God, they were good. Mm. I miss Ron Santo.
Yeah.
He was a good guy.
Now we got a winter weather advisory starting about 6 o'clock this morning until 3 o'clock.
I don't
Sunday
think I'm
going to
get much up on me. They were saying Megan Kohlmeyer on WGN Morning News was saying, I believe that north of I-90, very possible we don't get anything at all.
Yeah, well, we're looking at National Weather Service now saying 2 to 4 inches expected from 6 this morning until 3 o'clock Sunday morning. Lee, DeKalb, Kane, DuPage, and Cook counties.
That's south of me. So more, you know, it's funny. We always say north of I-80, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But really, it's south of I-80 where it's really hitting.
Oh, yeah.
This one, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We also have same thing for Kendall, Will, Lake Indiana, Porter, Newton, and Jasper. So the same effect. But they're getting expected 3 to 5 inches. And I think we have one more weather alert. This one is for Same times. No, this is, yeah, now in effect until 3 o'clock Sunday. Accumulations of 4 to 7 inches for LaSalle, Grundy, Kankakee, Livingston, Iroquois, Ford, Benton, those counties in Illinois, except for, what was the last one? Somebody's calling for pizza, maybe. I'll answer the phone.
News hotline tip in the newsroom. I'll tell you this. Track and Phil wrote there's Casey's General Store spread out throughout the Midwest, Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois. So there you go. And somebody texted me that there's one just 10 miles away from me where I live in West Dundee over in Hampshire. So there you go. The Casey's General Store is available too. Lots of good stuff going on out there. So thank you very much for helping us out with that. 312-981-7200 is the number. After the top of the hour news, we're going to talk to an author, Jack Hitt, from a Vanity Fair column or piece that he wrote about the Havana Embassy mystery and what happened in Havana. You know, we've talked about this a number of times on the show about the supposed sonic attacks. We have a gentleman who we talked to from New Zealand, who's an American who teaches over there, who says it's mass hysteria. This Vanity Fair article is the first time I've ever seen it written anywhere else. Mass hysteria is going to be the explanation for this. It's going to be fascinating. So I'm excited about that. We'll talk about that after 4 o'clock. The one other thing I want to mention or bring up, I haven't read a lot on it, but I know we will talk about this more as time goes on, is the Jeff Bezos divorce. Jeff Bezos, worth about $140 billion, richest man in the world, is getting divorced from his wife of 25 years. Apparently, it's going to get a little seedy because apparently he was sending pictures to his girlfriend. And she, I just read a headline, she may have accidentally revealed those pictures or something. So this is going to get a little hairy, but they got married 25 years ago, I think after only dating for 6 months. There was no Amazon at the time, so he wasn't worth a dime anyways. And it's believed there's no prenup. So she, by virtue of divorce, will become the richest woman in the world. Worth $70 billion if they split everything up.
You know, Bridget and I are adopting.
I think you need to be adopted, not adopt. I don't think Jeff Bezos is going to want to be adopted.
I don't care about him. I'm talking about his wife.
Oh, her, yeah.
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 She's going to be the... She can join us.
She can.
You know, we got to... I can move David to half the room.
You're adopting her?
Yeah.
I think it would be better for you if she adopted you.
No, we'll adopt... I mean, we're older than her.
That's true.
She could be one of our kids. Older kid.
I don't think she's that old, is she?
I don't know. I think
she's maybe my age.
All right, so CNN now has pictures of the bakery. There's apparently a fire still burning inside the building. There are apartments above the bakery. I'm not seeing any information as far as any fatality still. Again, this happens, this is the afternoon, I think it's, I want to say 8 hours in Paris. It's way far away from the Arc de Triomphe and the Eiffel Tower.
Good, but it's just a gas explosion.
It apparently right now it is just okay. A gas explosion, but it was a big one. It looks like the building hasn't fallen, and it doesn't look like it will fall. But it pretty much blew out everything within the building.
Yeah.
And there's still some fires burning there now. So, again, this was this is during midday there, just about, I want to say.
So, Roger, will keep us updated
yeah.
if there's anything else that breaks out of Paris. Jumping back to the Bezoses for a second. How hard is it to date if you're back on the market with $70 billion in your bank account? Imagine how leery you are of anybody that wants to go out with you.
Who says you want to date, though?
Do you need natural to? Human inclination?
Not necessarily.
Well, that's sad.
Wait, do they have any... They don't have any children, do they?
I don't think so, but I'm not 100% sure of that.
Okay.
I think they have a daughter.
But for any parent suddenly on the market again after 25 years of marriage, that's very difficult. But I just can imagine the leeriness you would have if you had $70 billion that you wonder, why does this person, you know, are they really interested in me? It would just be very tough, be very difficult, I would think, to find somebody that makes sense for you to be dating when you got $70 billion. It's a lot of money.
It's like, yeah, a big, I could take it off her hands for her.
Oh, will you stop?
If it's a problem.
Boy.
Well, I mean, you're I'm just gold, trying to help.
You gold digger. Man, Roger.
Wow. Image just flashed in my head, and it just made me really icky. Sorry.
That's okay.
It has to do with gold chains. We're not getting into
You're going
to
start wearing gold chains?
I don't know.
You're going to have put your bling on? Gold bling. Tooth, maybe?
My disco shoes.
Your disco god.
Who's the character from the Disco Steve? What's his name? From the Simpsons?
Is there a character named Disco
Steve? Yeah, he's always dressed up in disco. Like a onesie disco with the wide collar.
Apparently, I've not watched The Simpsons in a long time. I don't know.
He's been around for a long time.
So, part of this government shutdown, different stories we're hearing about it, mm-hmm. is what's going on at the national parks. And well, there are issues at Joshua Tree National Park, people cutting down the trees.
Yeah. In order to drive their four-wheel drive.
I don't understand that.
Yeah.
They're cutting down trees to drive their four-wheel drive. What does that mean?
In order to give them more room to go, so they don't have to like go in and out, you know, around and between. Instead of running them over, they cut them down. I don't get it either.
But then it's laying there on the ground, taking up more space.
I don't get it either. I really don't.
Pictures shared by the National Park Service and the nonprofit news organization National Parks Traveler show a downed tree and illegal campsites in California's Joshua National Tree Park. Quote, there are about a dozen instances of extensive vehicle traffic off roads and in some cases into wilderness. We had destruction of government property with the cutting of chains and locks for people to access campgrounds, Park Superintendent David Smith told National Parks Traveler. We've never seen this level of out-of-bounds camping. Everyday use area was occupied every evening. Joshua trees were actually cut down in order to make new roads. Despite the partial government shutdown, park officials have been able to keep most of the park accessible, but on Tuesday they announced the park would temporarily close this week so they could clean up, enforce safety, and repair damage due to vandalism. While the vast majority of those who visit Joshua Tree National Park do so in a reasonable manner, there have been incidents of new roads being created by motorists and the destruction of Joshua trees in recent days that have precipitated the closure, officials said on the park's website. Law enforcement rangers will continue to patrol the park and enforce the closure until park staff complete the necessary cleanup and park protection measures. Park released another statement Wednesday saying it would remain open and that access to campgrounds would be restored. Those were first shut down on January 2nd due to health and safety concerns due to near-capacity pit toilets. National Park Service officials have determined that by using federal land and recreation enhancement funds to immediately bring back park maintenance crews to address sanitation issues, the park will be able to maintain some visitor services, including reopening the campgrounds. Covering more than 792,000 acres from Palm Springs North to the town of Joshua Tree, park officials also said they plan to bring in additional staff to ensure the protection of park resources and repair some of the damages that the park has sustained during the shutdown.
Matt?
Yes.
Did you know that when I went to California, well, when I went to San Diego last year, mm-hmm. it was my first time like being on a plane for one, but
right,
seeing a beach.
That.
So it was all these cool new experiences for me. And one thing on my bucket list was to go see the Joshua trees.
Okay.
So I drove from San Diego to Palm Springs.
That's a long drive, right?
It was like a 3.5-4 hour drive.
Okay.
But it was such a cool drive because we took like the scenic route too, so it was a little longer, just so I could see these trees. So that just makes me
so
really
you made
sad.
It to the park and you saw the trees.
Yeah, we weren't able to get in though because by the time that we got there, the drive was so long it was closed. But I took pictures like just from right outside the gate.
Can you imagine? It's like Wally World. You get there and the park's closed. That's disappointing. Were you crushed when you got there and it said the park is closed?
A little, but it was still a fun adventure. I mean, I was in California, so.
Yeah, well, that's always a good time. Good. Pat Tomasulo of WGN Morning News got his own comedy show on Saturday nights in Chicago. Will never be the same. That's Man of the People tonight at 10 on WGN TV. So the national park is shut down there for a little bit. You know, and the one thing that's driving me crazy about this, so essential, people deemed essential are still getting paid. There are non-essential workers who still have, there are people who are furloughed, completely not working right now. People who have to work but don't get paid. And then people that are essential, so they get paid. They have to work and get paid. I believe like Secret Service is still getting paid. But there are people that have to work and not get paid. I don't understand, and I heard this talked about earlier today. I don't know if it was John or Bill and Wendy, but how are TSA agents not deemed essential enough to get paid? I mean, they're the ones that are protecting us from, you know, wrongdoing on the plane. They should be getting paid. How in the world are we not paying them? That seems crazy. Maybe I'm wrong, but man, I don't get where that comes from. Those people should be on the, yeah, we got to pay them. They're keeping us alive and in the air. Because if they stop doing their job or, you know, massively just start calling off because they've got to find other jobs to pay, can you imagine the crazy backups we'll have at airports and how bad that'll get? 312-981-7200 is the number. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Greg is in Des Plaines. Hey, Greg, how are you this morning?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, man. What's going on?
Nothing. I think the answer to the question of why TSA is not deemed important is because they have a 95% failure rate. You know, in their last audit a couple of years ago by Homeland Security, the red teams that go through and try to get, you know, the things that are deemed bad by TSA through, in 70 tests, they succeeded getting through TSA 67 times. So how can you be, you know, a service that's deemed, you know, important enough to keep paying them if you don't, you know, perform your job?
Well, why do we have them at all then?
That's my question. It doesn't prevent anything. They've never thwarted any true terrorist attack ever.
Well, would we know if they had?
Yeah, absolutely.
They would tell us?
Homeland Security would put that number out there. I have a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, that works for Homeland Security at the FBI, and I talk to him about this stuff all the time. And he's aware of failure and success rates across the board, whether it's guarding a Social Security office or it's guarding the FBI building, you know, here or TSA or whoever it may be. All of those contracts get a grading annually. And TSA is consistently the worst one on the across the board.
Hmm.
So obviously we need some security in place, but
yeah,
the amount of security that TSA puts there, it's never stopped anything substantial from happening.
Well, and the other,
and they're horrible at what they do.
I don't want to say that because those are hardworking people, and I don't know what these tests are and things like that. So maybe they need better training or better detection or better whatever. I don't know.
Right.
The other thing I don't understand is I thought we all pay for TSA with a charge on every ticket. Isn't there like a $10 9/11 security fee we pay on every airplane ticket?
Yeah, and the thing that I don't understand is my buddy works for a contractor that's contracted by the federal government, by Department of Homeland Security, to guard, you know, where he works. And that's how that contract works, whether it's for guard, you know, the guards that you see at Social Security offices. All of those are contracts. He's still getting paid. Yeah. Any of those guys that work under those contracts are, TSA should still be getting paid also.
They should, but I think if they're government employees, contractors, they have to pay, or else the contractors will just stop working, right? Because it's contract.
Yeah, I would imagine. Assume.
So I don't know. Thank you so much for checking in, Greg. Have a great weekend.
No problem. Have a good day. Have a good day, guys.
All right, sir. You too. Hear the sounds that matter. The top five at five from the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis. That's weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. And smart speaker users, you could just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Let's check some news now with Roger Battish. Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We've been talking about these alleged sonic attacks in Cuba for a long time here on the show, ever since they happened. And we chatted first, and we've chatted a number of times over the years with our friend Robert Bartholomew, who has told us time and again, no matter what story came out, I'm like, but aha, it's in the Times. They're saying, and he said, no, no. And he would, you know, dissect it step by step and say, this is mass hysteria, mass hysteria, mass hysteria. Finally, I see a story from Vanity Fair this week, the real story behind the Havana Embassy mystery in Vanity Fair. Jack Hitt, the author, is on the phone with us right now. Good morning, Jack. How are you, sir?
Hi, Matt. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone. I got very excited when I read this because we've been talking to Robert Bartholomew for the last couple of years about this, and he's been the only person I've seen saying mass hysteria, mass hysteria. And you wrote a very long piece for Vanity Fair about what happened in Havana and supporting the idea that we don't have science behind for any ray gun or anything like this. This looks like it is a case of, you know, when you start feeling something and then people start putting things in your head and you think there's something going on, that can really spread from person to person. And suddenly we have, you know, it's, you write in the piece that it's an unpopular term now, but this mass hysteria. Tell me about what you found about this and what kind of twists and turns this took as you were researching what happened in Havana.
Well, you know, from the very beginning, this is a science story. We're trying to figure out what happened here, right? People got sick.
Right.
Two dozen people reported these confusing symptoms, ranging from headaches to ringing in the ears to mental stupor. People couldn't, they felt like they were just mentally moving more slowly, all of these kinds of symptoms. But from the very beginning, it was also a media story. Just how we told this story in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, in the New Yorker, in every magazine. And one of the things that, you know, that you start to notice when you look at the whole way the story got told is that from the very beginning, this was described by the State Department as a sonic attack. You used the phrase yourself when you were introducing
right,
the story.
Right.
So that frames the whole thing. It's an act of war. There's a secret weapon somewhere. That's how we understand it. So we're all working backward from a presumption of what we think happened, that there was an attack. One of the CIA officers that has worked in the Cuban embassy told me off the record that, you know, normally when people get sick, you investigate the most likely possibilities, like food poisoning or poisoning, you know,
yeah.
Or any of the normal ways that a group of people would get ill. But that wasn't done. No. What happened in Cuba was that two or three people started to report that they felt funny and to each other. And then that got passed around the embassy. A number of people became alarmed because several of them had said that they heard this funny sound, and then they started to lose their hearing. The head of the embassy called a meeting. This is 2 years ago, right after Trump got elected in the months following, and said that there may be this possibility that the Cubans are hurting us in some way. And suddenly the number of people reporting illnesses went up to as high as 80 people. And then the State Department selected 24 from that group and flew them back to the mainland for testing. And that's when then the whole story starts yeah. to churn out of that action. And whether it was mass hysteria or conversion disorder, as it's sometimes called, and it's an important factor to talk about when we talk about mass hysteria or conversion disorder, and let's call it conversion disorder, that's the new phrase, or mass psychogenic illness, MPI, that's the other phrase you hear. But, you know, it's not faking a disease. This is something that runs all the way through every story that we hear, is that these people must be faking it, or they've been fooled. And one of the things Bartholomew and other scientists who study this psychological problem is that the body actually makes you ill when you're afraid. If you're terrified that someone is beaming harmful rays into your head and destroying your hearing or destroying your brain, Have you honestly been told by your, you know, the ambassador at your embassy that this may be happening? And some people have handed you tape recorders saying, like, well, if we have to record this sound. And if we can, then we can analyze it and figure out what it is. So if you're in that bubble and you're absolutely terrified that this is happening, then some people are going to react as if it is happening, and their body will react in ways that the fear gets converted into real symptoms.
Well,
that's why they call it conversion disorder.
And it's fascinating, right? To me.
So in the same way that, you know, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was going to say, because I've talked to Robert a number of times on the air over the years, and I never got to this with him, I think, because I haven't taken it from our conversations. That's interesting to me because he's told us about other instances of this happening. In fact, a famous case in the 30s here in Southern Illinois.
The mad gasser.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes,
that
absolutely.
One? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I've never thought, okay, they're really feeling this. I think it's more like I'm in the line of it's in our heads. We put it in each other's heads and it's there. When you say like the fear, you know, really becomes real to actual physical illness. So like when they think they have hearing loss, are they really having hearing loss because they think it, or they're just more in?
Yes.
So really, you might be so scared that you are literally having hearing loss.
And
wow,
they are losing their hearing, and they can actually test it and see that they've lost their hearing. So here's something that Robert said that really to me was very illuminating. It was like, we all know about the placebo effect, right?
Right.
The placebo effect is if you take a candy pill, but you believe your doctor has told you this is the cure,
right?
Right? The number of people that actually are cured, we consider it almost miraculous, right, is very high, right? And there's a standard placebo effect with any medication. Doctors know this, right? You give them medication, it may not even be working, but because you're being given this medication, many people will spike much better results, right? That's the body doing the exact opposite of what conversion disorder does. Mm. If you believe you're getting better, that will also help you get better, you know. We know that occurs. We've measured that. The placebo effect is very famous in the medical literature, right? And this is the opposite of that. If you believe you're getting sick, the body will get sick. And not like in your head. There was a study done of these Miami, the people who were flown back to the mainland, that was published in the Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA. And, you know, and they said that these guys were not malingerers, meaning they were not fakers. And they kind of missed the whole point. No one is alleging that the people in Miami don't suffer these symptoms. They do. That's really what's so treacherous about conversion disorder.
And that's fascinating.
Right? So it's not like... Yeah,
because I wouldn't have said, oh, they're faking it. I wouldn't have been in that camp. I would have been like, you know, they think they feel sick because their mind is telling them they feel sick. But you're saying it's not just your mind is telling you feel sick. Your body is actually manifesting the conditions that you think you have. You know, I would have, you know, in one of these instances, I would have said, oh, I feel sick. Well, that's just you think you feel sick, not that you're faking it, but your body is kind of making you feel sick. But you're saying actually testable things. You could actually have hearing loss based on the thought that this is happening and I'm having hearing loss. Your body will actually cause that to happen. That's fascinating.
Right. And for instance, there's there were these eye movement tests. This is mentioned in the JAMA study that they do. And a lot of these are involuntary actions. You can't fake them. You couldn't fake being ill with these tests if you wanted to. So they do test that they're having sort of like eye movement problems, right? Or balance issues. But understand too that there's been two sets of studies of these people out of Miami, out of Havana. And none of them has found an organic cause, or like there's no tumor found, or there's no brain destruction. There's no destruction of the eardrum or any of the internal organs. So it's not like anything physical has been seen. They've looked. That's why in the first medical study, the scientists said, like, these they manifest all the symptoms of a brain concussion, right? But then they couldn't find any of this typical sort of like, you know, manifestations of a concussion. And so they referred to it as the immaculate concussion.
Well, and
so you have an invisible cause that is producing these symptoms, and the State Department and the media in conjunction with them develop this into this idea of a sonic weapon, this ray gun,
right,
that you know is blasting our inner ear, right? But there was this other explanation that no one really wanted to look at or consider too seriously. It's always kind of slightly mentioned in some of these articles. But when you look at it as a function of conversion disorder, then an absolutely fairly coherent explanation of what happened in Havana and in the months following becomes absolutely clear.
I can understand from the layperson's term, it's tough to grasp, though, because it's not just, oh, they just think this. It's they thought this so strongly that their body is manifesting these symptoms. When you talk about the immaculate concussion, as they were referring to it, so I would think, oh, well, it just looks like they have a concussion because they don't have a baseline. They didn't do these tests before they went off to Havana. This
right.
is a 40-some, 50-some-year-old person, and this is their life, and this is what it is. But you would say it's not
right.
necessarily that. It is they're having these symptoms because they were so believing that these things were happening or frightened by them.
That's right. They're typically panicked. And, you know, if you look back, so, you know, normally when you get an article in a magazine or in the newspapers about mass hysteria, about conversion disorder, they always cite these historical examples of, you know, the barking, you know, nuns of, you know, the Middle Ages, or the children in Africa back in a long time ago that started laughing and could not stop laughing for months, and you know, this kind of thing. And the Salem witch trials, in some ways, was you know, sort of is understood now as a kind of mass hysteria. But so these extraordinary and old creaky examples, kind of, we laugh at them, and we think mass hysteria is some ridiculous thing from, you know, decades ago or centuries ago. And even like the mad gasser of, you know, in your state,
yeah.
and many of these gassing hysterias that happened in the 20th century. One of the things you learn when you study conversion disorder is that the way we panic changes from century to century, depending on what our greatest fears are. So, of course, witchcraft and the devil's intervention in the Middle Ages, these old forms of mass hysteria, that was the most rational, you know, solution to the problem 500 years ago, that it was witchcraft. That made complete sense. That was the most scientific explanation possible, that it was witches, right? And the gas thing, it's funny. So the most of the 20th century, most mass hysterias have been kicked off by a sense, by smell, that something is there's something in the air, right?
Interesting.
And so, and so if you trace it back, you know, the use of mustard gas in World War I by the Germans created this absolute panic in the middle of the war, right? Because soldiers were like, oh my God, you know, you can't fire a bullet at this. You can't protect yourself. You can't jump in a foxhole
right.
and protect yourself from mustard gas, right? So this was a terrifying new weapon. And reports of mustard gas and, you know, and our anti-German propaganda at that time was like, oh, these terrible Germans, you know, they're using mustard gas. And so that wrote that the level of terror around gas and funny smells became kind of a worldwide piece of information. And then after that, for the whole 20th century, and you know, you come into the environmental movement in the 60s, and a lot of the mass hysteria examples involve some kind of smell where people are like, oh, you know, what's happening to our children in the schools, or what is that smell? And sometimes it would just be identified as a bakery down the road or some benign source. But often it would cause these panics. And now, consider this. We live in a time when we are bombarded by sound. Our pockets, our phones beep at us, our toasters do, our stoves, our ice, you know, our refrigerators tell us that the door is left ajar, all with sound. We're bombarded with these funny noises, and we hear, like, you know, 7-Eleven stores use sort of in you know, slightly under the acoustic level of sound to repel teenagers. Have you heard about this?
No.
Where they use sound that only, yeah. So some of these stores use a sound device that, you know, there's a register of sound that you start to lose when, in your 20s.
Right.
It's very high up. It's very irritating to teenagers. So, you know, people over the age of 21 can't hear this sound.
So
like a dog whistle. And so some store owners have these boxes that they use to keep teenagers away because it's like a buzzing in your ear. And of course, you know, we used, you know, sound to in Guantanamo Bay to
right.
you know, torture, you know, suspected terrorists and so on. So, I mean, there's ways in which sound has become kind of like what gas was to the 20th century for us. You know, the other thing that's an interesting thing to do, and everybody can do this at home right now. If you Google mystery illness, in quotes, mm-hmm. and say school or Navy base or any kind of institution, because it often happens in a confined place, like an embassy, where people are kind of like stuck there, you know. You'll see that there's a ton of these mystery illnesses that pop up, and then they go away, and they never get explained. People get sick, usually a dozen or two. Sometimes you'll see that somebody is saying, like, maybe this is mass hysteria. But most of the time, not. And it's often in schools. So yeah. One of the things that Bartholomew says that I thought was really interesting, too, is that, you know, if people feel trapped and this thing is coming at them, this sonic gun or this gas attack or
right.
this sound device or whatever it is, that really ratchets up the panic, right? Because you can't get out. You're trapped in school. You're trapped in the military base. You're trapped in the embassy. You're trapped in the monastery, whatever the confining space is. And that allows the kind of the panic to rise to a level that might spark this kind of this kind of reaction. So I don't know. I mean, it's not clear that sound is the new kind of like torment for us in the 20th century. But you know, we live at a time when it's very hard to find a moment of silence. We are sure. literally just bombarded with weird noises all the time.
Well, Jack.
By the way, I think you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just going to say, you saw there was an item in the Times where some scientists studied very carefully the recording that was made by one of these Cuban embassy officials of this funny sound.
Yeah,
right?
What they said it was. Yes, go ahead.
And they and they concluded that it was this particular species of cricket. that is common in Central America, that produces this, like, you know, just ear shattering sound. I grew up in South Carolina. Let me just say, I mean, I'm very familiar with extremely loud insects, and it seems uncanny, almost unholy, that something that small can produce a sound so loud and bizarre. So that's totally credible that the sound that they recorded is crickets. But that's been the latest development in the story just in the last 48 hours.
That's crazy. Well, one last question here before I let you go, and I don't want to jump too politically here, although there's a whole political aspect to this, because, you know, President Obama opened the embassy and President Trump is trying to undo most anything that President Obama did. But I will jump to the wall for a second. When President Trump wants this wall and his own government is kind of refuting the numbers and what they say about the terrorism threat and how that would change with this wall, is there sort of, maybe among Trump or politicians in general at times, is there sort of a desire to induce a mass hysteria about certain topics to create the effect that they want?
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things we learned from what happened in Havana is that the story that got unfurled about the sonic weapon begins with the State Department.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's where it starts. The medical director of the State Department, Charles Rosenbarb, said this is a non-traditional weapon or source. I mean, he basically wrote off any of the common ways in which this might be explained.
Yeah.
Whether it was food poisoning or something, you know, or any of the other sort of like standard, you know, problems that would afflict a group of people getting sick in any institution, right? Those are all written off. And this extraordinary explanation was put forward as the most likely. It's sort of like, you know, when you hear something crashing and banging in your cellar or in the room next to your bedroom, you think like, is that a ghost that's come into my house, or has a raccoon got in through the dryer vent?
Or it was something just on edge, right?
If you think those are two equal possibilities, then you really, you kind of missed the Enlightenment. we get panicked and we think like maybe that's a ghost. But in all likelihood, which of those two options should you most likely believe? And it's probably the raccoon.
The story is... Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is the kind of place that we're in with our government often supplying sort of ghost-like explanations for so much that's happening in our culture without, you know, we've kind of lost the ability to do the sort of proper analysis that makes us understand, like, it's probably just an animal that got into the cellar. And increasingly, we're being given these details and these narratives that allow for the most extraordinary, often conspiratorial explanations and panic-induced explanations of what's happening in the world around us. You know, I don't need to tell you that, like, you know, the number of, you know, undocumented people coming across the border has been in decline for the last 10 years. People aren't coming over the border as much as they used to.
Right.
You know, crime is down, blah, blah, blah. You know, just yesterday I just saw that someone was going on and on about, you know, terrible crime in New York. I mean, I lived in New York for years. It's the lowest it's, you know, been in decades.
Right.
But, those are facts. And you can hear those, but you can also hear these extraordinary alternative explanations that often are panic-inducing descriptions of the world we live in. And this Havana incident is kind of a harbinger of the difficult sort of way we understand reality in the world around us today. One of the things that Bartholomew said last night is that, you know, in these schools, when a lot of these panic attacks, when these mass hysteria events happen, it's often driven by social media. Because, you know, the one thing that can really scare the hell out of you is if everybody's sending you a text saying, oh, my God, this has happened, right? So, and new media, by the way, is often at the intersection of many of these panic attacks through the years. That, you know, that these new ways of finding out information, and it can alarm us in ways that are unfamiliar to us.
Yeah, so and, the War of the Worlds, right? The famous
exactly.
broadcast. Or
exactly,
else.
Exactly.
Radio was exactly. still in its infancy then.
Right, and we think of that as like, oh, well, that was back then. We're better now. We're more sophisticated. Right. We understand how the world works. No.
Well, maybe we are, but so is the way we get the information. It keeps getting more and more sophisticated and more ways we're not used to it, too, right?
That's right.
Jack, I have to let you go because I have to get to the news. It's called The Real Story Behind the Havana Embassy Mystery. You can find it right now at vanityfair.com. It's in great detail. It's a very long piece, very well worth the read. It's excellent. I thank you so much for jumping on the phone. I hope we talk again.
Yes, that was great. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Jack Hitt, vanityfair.com. It's a fascinating story. We've got the news coming up here in a second on 720 WGN. I'm scrolling through my Twitter, and we just played that promo of Steve Cochran's show with Cody Parkey on the Today Show. Somebody on Twitter named Dave tweeted, I presume Parkey is a PR person. That person needs to be fired. Horrible move. Instead of doing interviews, he should be in the lab working on the fundamentals of NFL kicking. 43 yards is a damn chip shot. I don't know. That's true, and it did get tipped. Let's remember that. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WTV. Our friend Robert Bartholomew, who is referenced several times there by Jack Hitt, calls in to chat a little more about this right after we check the headlines with Roger Battish. Matt Cavallo with you here on 720 WGN. Roger, do you know what 50 years ago today was?
50 years ago today? Snowstorm.
50 years ago today.
A snowstorm.
January 12th, 1969.
Yeah, I was in high school. That was the very first time in over 100 years that Evanston Township High School was closed because of the weather. And guess how long it was closed?
One day.
You got it. You know why it was closed?
Because there was school the next day.
No, it was school of that day.
Why was school
the buses couldn't get through?
Ah, because of the snow.
Only because of the buses couldn't get through.
You might be surprised that that's not what I was referring to.
Oh, okay.
50 years ago today, Led Zeppelin released their first their debut album.
Oh, nice.
50 years ago.
Yeah. You weren't born yet, were you?
I was not, sir.
Yeah.
I was 3 years away.
I was asked what by your delightful producer. Pick a song. Yeah. And so I picked that one.
You picked the...
Which I don't think was off the premiere album.
It was not. That's on Led Zeppelin 3.
Yeah.
Roger, was that your surprise?
No. Actually, my surprise has left the building. Here's what the surprise was.
Oh, okay.
Adam was hungry for some pizza.
Right.
And he wanted to order from Papa Nino's and then come in there and, like, make you smell it and then walk away. Since nobody else wanted pizza, he decided not to order any.
Too funny.
Yeah.
So you were good. You were a good boy. You told him, I won't have any if it comes.
Exactly.
Good for you, Roger. Look at us. 3 weeks in, being
healthy.
We're
trying.
We are trying.
Ate all your guacamole, by the way. Sorry.
Good. Oh, is that what you had?
Wasn't it? I brought in guacamole and chips tonight.
Nice.
Matt just gave me over his leftovers.
Oh. Well, I offered you some from the beginning. You didn't walk in like you do with the hummus. So I brought it out to you.
I'm just teasing. Thank you.
Jeez.
I had teriyaki shrimp and fried rice.
Ooh, that sounds good. All right. I want to talk a little more about mass hysteria. Our friend Robert Bartholomew, who's quoted extensively in the story from Vanity Fair, is on the phone with us. Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone. It's been a long time since we've chatted, but I wanted to get you back on the phone because every time we talked about the Savannah thing, and I'd call you every time the New York Times or somebody else wrote something, and I'd say, aha! Aha, Robert, they're saying there's this. And you'd say, no, no, no. Look deeper into it. Doggone it. The science is bad. They don't have this right, and they're going to be wrong. And I don't know if this fully exonerates and makes me, it does make me come around, though, to see some other reporters finally catching on to this and giving you some love and saying this makes a lot more sense than anything else that's out there. Do you feel happy that, like, you know, You're finally being heard?
Well, you know, I understand why there is a misunderstanding with the diagnosis, because they are seeing some brain abnormalities, but it's not brain damage. With mass psychogenic illness, you can get, it often happens, neurological symptoms. And that's what you've got here, and they've mistaken those for brain damage. And this isn't the first time things like this have happened. And essentially, we have broken off international relations with a foreign country because of some crickets and cicadas, and cost them hundreds of millions of dollars in lost revenues, and got people all worked up about nothing.
Let me ask you about that. You mentioned that with these brain scans, there's some damage, so you could see where there was confusion, but it's not brain damage, it's just these alterations. And in the article that Jack Hitt wrote, the gentleman we spoke with recently, he wrote in here, but the physical symptoms created by the mind are far from imaginary or faked. They're every bit as real, every bit as painful, and every bit as testable as those that would be inflicted by, say, a sonic ray gun. So in all the times you and I have talked, I never gleaned this or remember us getting into this. So if there is a case of mass hysteria, as we've talked about in the past, and I've always thought, I wouldn't say, oh, it's just in their head. I would say they've convinced themselves that this is happening. So it's not that they're faking, but that they've just convinced themselves that they're worried. But he took that a step further. And would you say that, yeah, that's true, that not only do you believe it's happening, but you would actually possibly make yourself sick in an even testable way, like you would test that you had hearing loss because your body is so convinced that this happened?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, let's go back to that pizza, okay? Or the shrimp. If somebody just ran into the newsroom now and said, hey, did you hear? You know, the shrimp was contaminated with rat poison. You may, and very likely, will feel stomach pain, probably have rapid palpitations, heartbeat, have difficulty breathing, and may even vomit. Yet there's nothing physically wrong with you. You're perfectly healthy. But the thing is, with mass psychogenic illness, it actually changes the brain. So your ideas, it's the whole thing with the placebo effect and the nocebo effect. As long as you don't have something like really seriously wrong with you and maybe you have a bit of nerves or whatever and I give you a sugar pill and say you're going to feel better, you'll often feel better. But the thing is, if I give you a sugar pill and say, you know what, this is rat poison and we're shoving it down your throat, you're probably not going to feel better and feel unwell. And you actually do feel the symptoms and you do have changes that actually occur in your brain. But, you know, it's interesting. You say about, oh, they said they had the hearing loss and they had the white matter tract changes. Yeah. There's two interesting things here. I've spent the last few months writing a book on this with a neurologist. And a couple of interesting things. Number one is that there was leaked information before the Journal of the American Medical Association study came out that said there's white matter tract changes in these patients. Yep. When the Journal of the American Medical Association came out in February of 2018, they found white matter tract changes. Out of 21 patients, they had two mild and one moderate case of white matter tract changes. If you took 21 people from WGN, if there's that many employees, and gave them brain scans, that would be about right. You'd have three, maybe four people with white matter. It's very common, and it's common in everything from depression to normal aging. And the other thing is, you mentioned about hearing loss. Mm-hmm. That's right, and this was leaked to the Associated Press that there were about a third of the patients that were studied that had hearing loss. Now, this is the other study, the Hoffer study at the University of Miami. Of those patients he looked at, they were leaking information that a third of them had hearing loss. Okay, I get that. When they actually did the hearing studies, only two had hearing loss. Guess what? Those are the only two patients that had pre-existing hearing loss before they went to Cuba. And so what I think has happened here, I used to live and teach Aborigines in the outback of Central Australia, and I can remember sitting out there and thinking to myself, oh, my God, why did I come here? I'm going to have hearing loss because there were cicadas and crickets that were cricketing and cicadaing so loudly that I thought it was going to affect my hearing. Now, I've since talked to experts on hearing. They say, no, it's not loud enough to cause hearing loss, although people often think they have hearing loss. So what's happened is they thought they had hearing loss, but when they actually gave them the test, they didn't have hearing loss.
And so
now, there's one.
Go ahead.
Yep. There's one other thing here that's fantastic. I mean, it's the kicker of all kickers, and it's this: that and this happened for sure. After the first few patients, people in the State Department actually got a hold of recordings made by the staff in Cuba that were claiming to hear these sounds and feeling unwell. They took the recordings. They took them back to Washington, and they played them for staff members who were about to go to the Havana embassy. And they said, you know, you want to be on the lookout for this. These are these high-pitched sounds that are accompanying these illnesses that people are reporting. Now, since that's happened, the FBI went and they had those recordings, and they showed them, they played them for an expert on physics and acoustics. And they also played them to a bug expert. They both said they were matching the sounds of crickets and cicadas. So basically, you have the State Department playing sounds of crickets and cicadas and saying, be on the lookout for this when you go over there. There could be some type of sonic attack going on. And they go over there and they hear things just like this. and they think they're being attacked. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's so interesting. So
you can't make this stuff up. But the sad thing is, and the crazy thing is, this has caused, you know, insects have caused an international incident which has resulted in Cuba losing tens, if not hundreds of million dollars in lost revenues from tourism and all sorts of things. And it's not what people believe it is. And so right now, there's no Freedom of Information Act documents out there. They're still not releasing them. I have no doubt when the FBI and the State Department do release the Freedom of Information Act documents, you're going to find that this is what the FBI has concluded all along. And look, the CDC has been looking at this. The Center for Disease Control has been looking at this for like a year. If there was something to this, they would have come out and said something, but they haven't. And actually, what you've been hearing, no pun intended, from the FBI and from the CDC is crickets.
All right, two quick questions, Robert. One is, so we talk about, well, let me jump to the placebo, back to the placebo for just a minute. You talk about how there's a placebo effect. You take the sugar pill and you feel better. Now, is that... in the cases where the people do feel better, is that a case of just my brain is just thinking I feel better and making me feel better? Or is that actually sometimes people testably will be better because their mind, I don't know, healed their body in some way because they thought they had gotten good medicine?
Yeah, it's not so much healing. Like, look, if you have cancer, it's not going to heal your cancer.
Right.
But it often will give you temporary relief from pain and symptoms like that. If you have back problems or back pain, you can get temporary relief from this. But it's not a cure. And, you know, it's a similar thing that's believed with stuff like acupuncture. And so, but the thing is, it's not just all in your head. It does actually cause changes to the brain. But here's the thing. If you're told that you have brain damage and it's going to take a while for you to recover, if you ever do and you'll still have symptoms, then you're not going to get better, or it's going to be harder for you to get better. Right. But if you believe that these are some temporary abnormalities caused by a, let's not use mass hysteria, let's call it a collective stress response, then you're much more likely to recover more quickly. And that's what's going on here, and it's causing the epidemic to prolong itself.
Well, that was my second question was, so if I was maybe, I don't know if you would say stronger of mind or maybe just more cynical or just more maybe practical, would you say, now that sounds like cicadas to me? I mean, if somebody there was told this, who felt sick, who believed this all, and you said to them, hey, here's what it really is, and they said, oh, okay, would they then feel better? Is it still sort of a mind over matter type thing with something like this?
I do. I think if they honestly believe that, and that's what was causing their sickness, then absolutely. I think slowly over time they would begin to feel better. I cannot emphasize enough that the patients in Cuba, the American embassy staff, are normal, healthy people. And they are victims. And, you know, when they had, and I've given this example before to you, when they had the famous October 30th, 1938 War of the Worlds broadcast,
right.
And on that broadcast, people thought they were being invaded by Martians temporarily in the New York, New Jersey area, not in Chicago so much. They were saying on the radio that the Martians were firing heat rays and firing poison gas. People actually, this is documented, they actually called the police and were coughing on the phone from the poison gas.
Yeah.
And they said they could actually feel the heat rays.
Yeah.
So it's the power. It's the power of the mind and suggestion. But, you know, these people aren't crazy. They're not abnormal. It's, you know, and this could potentially happen to anyone. And I would submit that, you know, if it happened tonight and you were convinced that pizza and the shrimp and all that stuff, whatever you had, was, you know, off, or somebody said, oh, you know, that pizza was left out for 2 days. You didn't realize that. and you thought it had been left out for 2 days and it's got like salami on there and stuff, well, you might start feeling unwell.
Well, Robert, I'll give you a quick example that I think relates. Just a couple of weeks ago on the show, I'm in the studio by myself. I have the lights out in here just because it's middle of the night, and we have a bunch of monitors that brighten things up. And I talked to Roger in the newsroom through a monitor where I see him. And we're chatting, and he thinks he sees a shadow behind me because we've got the shades open. There's whatever, because it's time of night. He's convinced he sees something behind me. And he says, hey, not to be weird, but is there something behind you? And I laugh, and I'm like, well, I don't think so. And I turn around, I look, and I don't see anything. And then he goes, no, I'm serious. I'm really serious. And he got very serious with me very quick. And so then I turned like, oh, crap, is there something? And Jess said something into the microphone at that time that I didn't expect, and I screamed. And so in some instance, I had a very minor sort of mass hysteria, didn't I, that I convinced myself that some crap was about to go down?
Yeah, and you know, it's right now here in New Zealand, and I'm a night owl, it's 11:56 at night. Now, if I'm here in this house in the countryside where I am, I'm in the countryside, and I'm totally alone and hear a noise, like just something falls in the other room, I act totally differently than if it's 3 in the afternoon and there's 5 people here and
sure.
We're having a party.
We all would,
I'd say, oh, I wonder what that was. But if I'm here alone, it's like, ooh, you know, is it a ghost or something, right? And I really think the best way to describe this case, and I've said it before, you know, when you hear the sound of hoofbeats in the night, first think horses, not zebras. These people weren't even thinking zebras. They were thinking unicorns, you know, something that's from the realm of science fiction.
Yeah. Fascinating. When is the book coming out?
Well, it'll be later this year.
And, you know, book publishing companies are very rich, and they often send writers on extravagant world tours. Will you be coming to Chicago?
I don't know. We'll have to see about that. I grew up in upstate New York on the Canadian border on a farm. So, I love the U.S. I Chicago's great. But, you know, over here in New Zealand, they have preconceived ideas. You know, it's... you know, it's like there's people with machine guns everywhere, or that's, it's just a different perception.
I would imagine we have quite the reputation in some countries around the world. Well, I've got to go because we got the next show coming up, but we will talk again, and when the book comes out, and if we can get you to the States and into Chicago, we'd love to meet you in studio sometime, Robert.
Great. Nice to talk to you.
It's great to talk to you again. Thank you so much for being willing to come on the air again so early, as always. We'll say hi to Orion Samuelson here in a minute on 720 WGN.